This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious.
5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Are you gonna wait for a sign? Your miracle? Stand up and fight. This is it. Make no mistake where you are. This is it. Your back's to the corner. This is it. Don't be a fool anymore. This is it. The winning.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming up at you here on this Monday evening, and of course it is a Memorial Day Monday, and as always, we dedicate this show to all of those troops and members of the U.S. Armed Forces that pay the ultimate sacrifice, of course, to keep us happy and healthy here at the homeland. So, of course, thank you to all of them, and tonight's show is dedicated to their memory. And Scott Criscola, how are you doing today, sir?
Good evening, JR, and good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 451 of the Gold Standard. And yes, it is a celebratory and somber weekend at the same time, but we thank all of our living veterans. They are honored on Veterans Day, and of course today is for those that no longer with us that allow us to do this silly show for so many years. JR, it's good to talk to you, sir. You had a nice weekend. It was good to see you on Saturday. It's a new rite of tradition here on Memorial Day weekend to see you on Saturday at the Island of Misfit Toys.
It was quite the island, yes, of many, many misfit broken toys, completely broken. It was a great time, as always, with good, nice weather. Today kind of sucked weather-wise. But you know what also is marked by today, Scott? Pretty much the unofficial start of summer, which also means the start of Yacht Rock season. And you probably heard Mr. Kenny Loggins play us in here tonight. And if we're talking Yacht Rock and we're talking summer, there's only one other guy that could be joining us here tonight. He is a mainstay of this era that we're going to be talking about tonight. He's been hyped. I think he's watched the show 5 times in the last week to prep for this episode. And there's a man we also saw at the island on Saturday, Mr. John D'Amato. Johnny, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm awesome. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. It turned out to be a lovely Monday evening, and we're going to talk about the only WrestleMania that was on a Monday evening. I hope I'm correct on that. I hope I don't get corrected on that, but I'm pretty sure, safe to say, it was the only WrestleMania on a Monday evening. And
yes,
it's good because I was with a couple guys that got me through the last two WrestleManias that ended Monday morning. But you guys helped me survive those...
That's right.
The souls, Johnny, we were the sole survivors of this year's WrestleMania of our team, our 4-man team. Two went down and two survived. It is great to be here. Before we get into our Vintage Vault tonight, though, I wanted to quickly take a minute, talk about our new project that's launching. We got a couple of big projects coming. One we'll keep disclosed for the next month or so. But another one is very public and just getting underway, and that is a pretty much a knockoff of what Pro Wrestling Only Board did with their greatest wrestler ever poll and project. We are doing the greatest WWE wrestler ever project. And we have a giant, giant Facebook discussion page going. We went through the nomination process over the weekend, and the goal is for everybody that's involved to submit a list of 100, you know, the top 100 greatest WWE wrestlers of all time. We'll aggregate all the points and then come up with our own overall list and order them. Now, the trick here that makes us different from what, like, PWO did is that you could only factor in their WWF/E career. So a guy like Ric Flair, who pretty much always finishes in the top two on all these lists, will probably be somewhere in the 20s maybe or 30s on this list. You know, so it's interesting because you really can only factor in their specific time in WWE and not their outside time. So it's going to be a lot of fun. The discussion's already hot and heavy. And it really is, you know, a big part of this project is the discussion, is the learning. It's easy to come in with a preconceived notion to say, oh, I already know my top five. But we want everyone to take the time, and we're giving people a lot of time, like at a minimum probably 6 months, to build this list, to go through, do some research, suggest matches, make the case. And we're already working on several projects, whether it be podcasts or written form for, you know, staff members and others partaking in the project to make their cases for different members or different, you know, nominees. So say I really want to, you know, stump for whoever, Earthquake. You know, I may take some time on a show and talk about him or make a post about why he's important or share some matches. And you should take the time, if you're participating, to learn, to watch those matches and maybe change your mind. And, you know, maybe you have your top 40 set. Maybe that's relatively smooth. But it's that back 60 that you really have to think about, or even the back 20, whatever it is. Someone you may not have thought could sniff your list of greatest WWE stars ever. You've got to fill out those spots. So someone like a D'Lo Brown or whatever may sneak into that end. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's brought out a lot of discussion. We have a nice group, a nice mix of both staff and fans of the show. So I would love, you know, if you haven't signed up yet and you want to be part of this project, just reach out to us on Twitter, on Facebook, via email, and we'll get you the links that you need. If you go to PlayStation.com, there's a post for it that you can click, and it has all the information there as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're probably going to talk about it quite a bit over the coming months. There'll be a lot of shows on the feeds for it, but we have a really strong group. It's going to be a lot of fun, Scott.
I absolutely agree, JR. This is one of those ones that we always kind of hinted about for pretty much not even before the website started when we were doing the podcast. And PWO did a great job, but I thought it was better that we kind of skewed it to the one territory that everyone is, for the most part, fully invested in as a fan for most of their lives. So we tried to skew it because WWE is probably the easiest at the moment, easiest promotion to watch stuff from it at right now, maybe next to NWA, but...
No, I mean, there's a lot out there if you want it, but I would say it's our fan base is the most, you know, prevalent in the world of WWE, but a big part of it was that the other one's already done. Like, PWO, those guys did a great job. So, to me, to revisit that project didn't make a lot of sense because you're probably going to come up with, I mean, I don't want to say similar lists because if that same group did that project 100 times, it'd probably be 100 different orders. But
right, exactly.
You know, I think the generalities would be the same, and it would be a hell of an honor. I mean, those guys, they spent I don't know how long looking at footage from wrestlers from all around the world. And I think, you know, our fan base has a solid, strong knowledge base in WWF. So it allows for them to take that extra time to really deep dive into guys that they may not be as familiar or may want to refresh. It'll narrow the scope and allow for more time for research because you kind of have the knowledge base already.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. And again, you talked about preconceived notions and you know, guys who, and you're going to see a boatload of nomination threads. They're still going up little by little as we go along. You know, take your time before you go on there and comment. You know, you don't have to go on there and go, oh, I don't know really a lot about this guy, I'll have to start watching. No, take your time. Take your time before you go on there and start typing. We want to get...
Or don't go in there and just say invested. No. You know, don't go in there and just say no. Like, definitely...
Yeah, exactly.
Open mind.
Yeah, don't do one-answer things. He's my number two. Right. Why is he your number two?
Right.
Or why is he not your... Why would he be your number 102.7 or something? Mm-hmm. Let's have some fun with it. You know, we can have a good time. And, yeah, there's a lot of gimmies. I mean, obviously, there's two debates. There's whether you make the list at all and whether where guys would go. Because, I mean, there's probably a solid between 20 and 25 guys, everybody would probably have, maybe 30 guys. It's just a question of who's one, who's five, who's 10, whatever.
Right.
And that's the best part. And have some fun with it.
Yeah. A big part of the project really is the journey for this. I mean, it's meant to be a community project. Like, I'm not interested if someone already has their list and they're just trying to get it in. Like, I want you to take the time and learn and take part of the discussion and be part of the community of with this project. That's really the big piece of this. It isn't just to rush through and get it done. It's more to take the time, enjoy the discussions, get to know some people. And we've already added like a bunch of people from outside kind of the PTBN world into this group. So I'm hoping they'll be part of the community going forward. So a lot of fun. So there you go. I just wanted to get that out and talk about it there. And of course, we'll be covering that week to week here, I'm sure. So why don't we go ahead, Scott, and dive our way into our Vintage Vault?
Yes, because there's probably a boatload of guys that will probably on this show that will be on your list, and I'm sure a good amount that won't, unless you have a good argument for it, and in which case D'Amato and I are all in. So for some of the knuckleheads, but we'll see. Of course, tonight we are at the biggest show of 1986. We're not in our house tonight, JR, but we are all across the country. Mm-hmm. So let's dive in to WrestleMania 2. What was it? Episode 4, I think we did. That was the first one. Episode 3, I think. 3 or 4?
Yeah, it's up there. It was one of the earliest.
One of the earliest. Episode 3 or 4 that we did this show. And we certainly have a better, more coherent analyst with us than the last time. But
I won't be too sure about that.
So your expectations for you were low. So
lower your expectations.
All right. April 7th. 1986, and as Johnny said, it was a Monday. It'd be the last WrestleMania that would not be on a Sunday, and to this date, the only one. From three venues, we're going to be at the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum, right in Johnny's backyard, the Rosemont Horizon in suburban Chi-Town, and the LA Sports Arena in Los Angeles. I, like you, John, watched this show live on closed circuit from the New Haven Coliseum.
And even though you maintained for years that this was a Tuesday, right, in your mind?
I know. I always thought it was a Tuesday for some odd reason. Maybe it's because I don't know why I thought it was a Tuesday. But in any event, it is a Monday. And I watched it on closed circuit. Johnny, you watched it on – where did you watch it on closed circuit?
No, I could not. Unfortunately, I did not.
Oh, I thought you did watch it on closed circuit.
Nah, I had to catch it. No, unfortunately, I caught the last half on a Scramble.
Scramble Vision?
Yeah, funds were like, tough at the time. I was a struggling college student at the time.
Makes sense. Fair enough. Yeah. And JR was not watching this at the time.
I had no idea what WrestleMania 2 was. I mean,
watching the Care Bear movie.
There's probably some fragment of my mind that was at least conscious of Hulk Hogan at this point, just due to my brother. But I wasn't definitely not watching or had much clue of what was going on.
Exactly. So we are at three venues. We have the announced teams are all mishmashed all over the place.
Yeah.
Kind of fascinating combinations. We'll talk about them as we move across the country. But before we go any further, JR, why don't you give us the rest of the report?
Our WWF champion, Hulk Hogan, is 805 days into his reign. Randy Savage, 58 days as IC champ. The Dream Team, 226 days as tag team champions. And Fabulous Moolah, 133 days as women's champion. The premier sporting event of the year, what the world has come to, is the tagline. Closed circuit attendance, 319,000 overall, drew $4 million. Buy rate, 7.0. Long Island drew 16,585 with a $414,000 gate. The Rosemont drew 9,000 with a $294,000 gate. And the LA Sports Arena, 14,500 people for a $380,000 gate. So there you go.
All right. Pretty good. Pretty good money. Pretty good money. Although, with Johnny, you and I watched it again Saturday night with Greeny and AA. It looked like there's about 15 people at the Nassau Coliseum. The lighting was so bizarre in that place, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was a little very dark, especially outside the ring. I don't. They couldn't quite get that figured out yet. When the action spilled outside.
We kept saying that, Dick Ebersol should have, NBC should have kicked in a little extra scratch here and kind of helped out. It was very bizarre.
We had his wife in the booth, of course.
That's right. So let's go to our first broadcast. Let's go to the Nassau Coliseum for part one. Your announcers, Mr. Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Doesn't quite, JR, have the we see him often, of course, when we do Saturday Night's main event. But doesn't quite have the Vince poof yet. The hair's still kind of low, thick, and parted, not quite poofy yet. And as JR mentioned, his broadcast partner on this evening is Mrs. Ebersol, otherwise mm-hmm. known as Susan St. James, who at the time, kind of funny that her her husband was a muckety-muck for NBC, while she at the time was on a very high-rated show on CBS. Of course, she was Kate on Kate and Allie at the time. So she was pretty,
of course.
Oh, Scott. I don't believe. I think George should come back for the snake. And, oh, God, it was fucking dreadful.
We'll get to it.
Compared to the other females that are in the broadcast tables for the next two venues, she was the shits. Anyway, we open with Vincent Kennedy named Command is in the ring, does the WrestleMania 2. And JR, we get America the Beautiful, fortunately mm-hmm. not from Mean Gene,
yes, thank God.
But from?
The great Ray Charles. Of course, yes. One of the best renditions ever. It finished pretty highly, I believe, when we did our WrestleMania List-a-Mania series back in the spring, if I recall correctly at the time. It was rated one of the highest by our list makers. Yeah. And I thought the show, well hyped and built. Scott, we've talked about it a lot, more than just a house show now. It's not like WrestleMania 1. It was kind of a souped-up MSG house show, bigger, spectacular across the three sites. And, yes, Vince does open the New York portion, introduces Susan, St. James joins him, and then we get Ray Charles singing. I like when Vince demanded Fink to hold the ropes open for Susan. That made me laugh for some reason. Like, he does it off mic. He just, like, points at him and, like, yells at him to open the ropes. And then we go backstage. Actually, I'm sorry. We go across the country where Mean Gene joins us from Chicago to hype up the show and atmosphere there. And then we cut to a pre-taped promo from Lou Duva, boxing manager extraordinaire. He's with Roddy Piper and Bob Orton to hype their big boxing match. Piper talks about his training and makes fun of Mr. T's hair and gives his iconic line saying he'd quit wrestling, boxing, tiddlywink, and dating girls if T knocked him out. So that sets the stage for a little bit later. But up first, like you said, we head to the ring, and our opener is an interesting match, guys. I'm interested in your thoughts on where these guys were headed, and that is Paul Orndorff taking on the Magnificent Morocco. Two guys that have been pretty heavily utilized in 1985. We saw Morocco feuding with Hulk Hogan, then with Ricky Steamboat. We saw Paul Orndorff mixing up with Bobby Heenan's crew after the WrestleMania 1 fallout, feuding with Roddy Piper as well. And both guys had hot stuff going on and then petered out like right before WrestleMania. And they just kind of stick them together. So it's a good match on paper. These guys have good, 85s, good backgrounds. But such a random pairing, and there's nothing behind it. Like, they didn't even have Morocco attack them on TV. Like, nothing. They just stick them together here out of nowhere. Orndorff gets a good pop, and Morocco and Fuji confer as we get going. We get audio-only inset promos by both men, which is very odd. We've never had that. It was so weird. The match starts with some feeling out and lockups and trading of offense by both. Orndorff wins another lockup and hits a flurry of offense capped by an armbar. Susan adds in some bland comments at Vince's prompting as Orndorff focuses on the arm. Susan says Fuji's using an ancient Chinese technique at ringside. As Morocco breaks the hold of the fireman's carry slam, Orndorff fires right back with hot right hands and both men tumble to the floor and brawl to a wicked soft double countout. I thought this is a really big letdown here, just when it was getting cooking, too. Right at that moment is when it ended. And so disappointing, given the years that these guys have had, the positioning they were at. There had to be a better way to use these guys and fodder here. I guess we could talk about it as the show rolls on. But I thought it was a waste of both guys. Both have been fantastic to this point since the beginning of 85 and just get nothing here, just completely wasted. I went half a star just because of who they were, and I liked the brawl at the end. But, God, what a disappointing opener, Scott.
Yeah, I gave it a half star too, JR. We're going to notice, and I'm curious both your guys' thoughts as we move along. You're going to notice that the first two venues, they were definitely having the pedal on the format, the formatics pedal to the floor, because the thing to the, like it's Smokey and the Bandit, the pedal to the metal and the thing to the floor. Now, they were definitely paying attention to time early on. And Johnny, you and I were talking about this on Saturday. They were definitely skittish about making sure this three-venue thing didn't blow up in their face. So they were definitely edgy about making sure that the Long Island third motored along. Mm. And I think that's what hurt these matches. I love both these guys. For those that have already looked at the nominations, there is I don't have to say anything more about how much I love Magnificent Morocco. And I thought him and Orndorff could have had a really good 7 or 8 minute brawl. And instead, JR, it looked like they were booked for a 7 or 8 minute brawl, and then 4.5 minutes in, they decided to stop. Like, it made no sense at all. And it was right as you're getting to the hot portion of the match when they're brawling out on the floor and things are just chaotic. And I think a lot of it was because they were a little nervous about making sure that the Long Island, I mean, they obviously had, you know, sheets out and they had things in their mind. Vince did, and the, you know, George Scott and, you know, Pat and them, about when they wanted to go to each city. So I'm sure they had it in their heads that they had a time set to go to Chicago. And I think that caused the Long Island portion of the show to be a little lousy, because this match could have been so much better with another 4 minutes. We didn't have a lot of time, at least maybe another 4 minutes, four more minutes. And I think you could have had, a pretty good memorable brawl. Instead, you get half a match, and it ended pretty flat. I gave it a half star. And incidentally, I looked back to PlaceBeNation.com, and Ray Charles, America the Beautiful, was number one.
So. Yeah, I thought so. I thought they were obviously toward the number top. One. And it was a great rendition. It was fantastic.
It was tremendous. And the person that does it the following year was number two, but we'll let you know who that is when we get there. So, I gave it a half star because it was half a match. What did you think, John?
Guys, there's a classic Coliseum video exclusive. It was scrubbed from the network. There's a classic Orndorffian moment at the very beginning of the match. He slams Morocco. Morocco kind of backs off, and Fuji bangs on the ropes hysterically. And Orndorff kind of – he puts his hands behind his head, and he spreads his thumbs out with his eyes and gives like, oh, yeah, like a Japanese mocking. I noticed it was good I watched both the video, because on the network it was totally scrubbed, that part. And then Susan goes, oh, that looks like a challenge to me, man. it was just a classic Orndorff racist move. Yeah,
God. I totally forgot about that because we was cut off the network.
Yeah.
So the WWE Network cuts that off, but they don't cut any of the...
Yeah, the spider.
Zoo, and no. We'll keep that stuff in there, but we're going to cut out
It also makes you wonder if they actually edited it into the Coliseum Home video, like a different camera angle that wasn't... because I would think the network is like the pay-per-view version. Maybe they actually cut it in at the time.
But getting into the booking, Vince mentioned during the match, like, this is the first time that these two guys have ever faced each other, I believe. So I think they wanted to get, like, some fresh matchups from WrestleMania. They weren't quite sure about their philosophy, and I think they'd get it right, obviously, you know, the next year where the feuds would build up towards WrestleMania. But here they were just kind of experimenting with the pay-per-view, and they're like, hey, let's, instead of putting, you know, matches that everybody's seen at the houses, let's just give, you know, let's give people some fresh matches. And I as we see, it didn't really work out too well, especially in this case, because these guys deserve better, especially, like you said, you guys have been went through 85, and Orndorff was on fire as a face, which is like an underrated moment of his career. Everybody remembers him with Piper and him turning on Hogan as his like big career moments. But this face turn kind of is under the radar of how great Orndorff was and how he popped a lot of crowds. So it was a little disappointing that him and Morocco were kind of jerking the curtain here. So it kind of looks like Piper and Heenan are probably laughing at him, saying, hey, when you were with us, you were main evented. And now look at us. We're in the main event in one, and you're jerking the curtain here. So it was a little disappointing for as far as Orndorff goes, but as far as the 3 or 4 minutes before the count out, I give it a star. It was a typical '80s, you know, good exchanges and stuff. So I give it one star.
That's a great point about them wanting to mix it up and give, you know, different matches than people have seen. I would argue maybe more than the booking. You know, to that point, what hurts this more is the format of the show and the way they're rushing through everything. I mean, I understand that they wanted to have, you know, I don't want to call them full cards, but a good, healthy amount of matches in each arena. But when you look at the full layout and as we move through, so much stuff ends up getting rushed because of it that it hurts in the end. And this is one of the ones that really hurt.
They were really paranoid about the logistics with the three venues. So they're like, okay, guys, get in and out real quick and, you know, let's get this moving, because they were really paranoid about going back and forth. So they probably told the guys, hey, go home quick.
All right, so one in the books, not the best start, but we'll see how things move from here. We go backstage where Mr. T, Joe Frazier, and the Haiti Kid, sitting on nobody's lap, are warming up backstage. T issues his final warnings for the big boxing match still to come here in Long Island. We then head back to the ring for our next match, which was an Intercontinental title match, as Randy Macho Man Savage is defending against George the Animal Steel. Back on the January 4th, 86, Saturday's main event, George Steel developed a crush on Miss Elizabeth. Over the next few weeks, Steel would begin giving gifts to her, infuriating the Macho Man, leading to this match here. And we'll have a lot to talk about with this feud, Scott, I'm sure, as we move ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But it rolls on
more
here.
More than we'll ever want to.
having kicked in the earlier in the year, Steel is infatuated with Liz, and Savage wants none of it. Susan says she's rooting for George and puts over Liz as gorgeous and dumps on Savage for how he treats her woman. His woman, Savage and Liz have the usual star presence and aura during the entrance. We get a quick Macho inset promo. Savage dodges Steel early, bailing to the floor and stalling. And then Steel finally chases him, catches him by the leg and gnaws on it. Savage buries Steel with a running knee, but Steel hoists Savage up by the throat and slams him back to the mat. Steel lands a short punch and then talks to Liz, which allows Savage to yank him back so he gets hung up in the ropes by his foot and then hammers away. Savage goes up top and gets a sloppy high cross body for two, and Steel pitches Macho to the floor on the kickout. Savage comes back in, but Steel chops away and then chucks Savage outside again. Macho crawls under the ring and then attacks Steel from behind with a knee to the back. Steel bites Savage's arm as Susan just laughs and makes random pointless interjections. Savage bails outside to regroup and grabs a bouquet of flowers from a fan and smacks Steel with them. Steel fends them off and shoves Savage to the buckle and then smashes him in Macho's face. Steel shoots Savage to the corner but then stops and chews up a turnbuckle. Savage comes over but Steel shoves the stuffing into his face. Savage rolls outside and Steel chases as Vince comments about the lax officiating, to which Susan says maybe the referee has a thing for Liz as well. Steel gets caught talking to Liz, and Savage smashes with an axe blow off the top, and then back inside, Savage slams Steel and hits the big elbow, but Steel fucking kicks out at one. Vince says that Steel's the first one to escape that hold, which, of course, we know, Scott, is not true, because Hulk Hogan's done it like three times already. Steel whips Savage into the corner and kicks away, but Savage rolls him up and puts his feet on the ropes for the win. Such a stupid fucking finish for so many reasons. Like, it ended literally moments after he blew out of the elbow. Why can't they just finish it with the elbow, or not do the elbow at all and just do the roll-up? Complete waste of Savage. This feud just needs to go away. It was fine enough for the smoke and mirrors. It was better than Saturday's main event. But Steel is blowing out of the elbow and getting rolled up less than a minute later was completely insipid. Savage escapes with the title and his woman, but he just deserves more at this point. I wish they could have found someone for him to westle and just have Steel be in the corner. Like, just we just not did not need this match yet from these two. And it's just, I really tried to watch it for, you know, Glenn Butler's sake. I really tried to enjoy it. And I just could not get into it. It's just Steel's antics are just so boring to me. And I get that he's infatuated with Liz, but to me it just completely derails anything, you know, any part of enjoyment of this match. Johnny, what do you have to say about this one?
I don't know who was more repulsive, Susan St. James or the animal. She was over the top annoying, saying, "Oh, if Liz had any taste, she'd change boyfriends now. Like, yeah, leave him for a 70-year-old hairy guy." You know? And also, like when Steel was doing one of his many bites, she's like, "All right, George, bite his leg, eat his leg." It's like, oh god. And you know, and then when my Macho was taking a beating, she'd be like, "Oh, he's not so macho now." But I mean, Steel, come on, yeah, you called it. They're just kicking out at one dismissively on the elbow. That was repugnant. And just with the biting, I mean, I put up a lot with sports entertainment. Just the biting gets me. It was just so excessive. The arm, the leg. If the match went a couple more minutes, he would have been a schmantz. I mean, come on, man. It's like, Jesus Christ. with the flowers, with the you know, with the turnbuckle stuff and the flowers, it was just a big mess.
And then you can see George just looking at him going, schmantz, schmantz. What's on? Maybe he would have said that to Susan St. James.
Oh my god!
Oh god! I'm sorry. I this is a dud. It's a fucking dud. I used to just be frustrated like you, JR. Just flat out. I literally was getting angry as this match was progressing. First of all, how does it hurt to bite through a boot? He's biting him through his boot. I mean, it can't hurt that much. I mean, and at least four times in this fucking match, four times, the ref should have disqualified George Steel for using the fucking turnbuckle shit and part of the flowers. The whole thing sucked. All the logic went out the window in this match just so George Steel can get his goddamn shitty parlor tricks in. You have the most, to this point probably, talented stud, top to bottom. And you threw him down the toilet just so George Steele could get his stupid fucking turnbuckle tricks in. First booking thing I would have done, swap George Steele and Tito. Send George Steele out to L.A. for that match, which we'll get to later, and put Tito here for his last rematch. Why is that so fucking hard?
I mean, even if you don't want to go that big, like if you want to save that those rematches for the houses, or not job out Tito here. I mean they kind of do anyway. But I mean, even if you find anyone else on this card to give them a throwaway IC title match, they win. We've talked about it before, win a number one contender match. There had to be someone else. I mean, look at that battle royal. I would have taken even Hillbilly Jim over him or King Tonga.
Oh, we just saw Orndorff. How about Orndorff?
Orndorff Savage. There you go.
Give him a count out victory. Yeah.
You know, or have the ending, as much as it would have sucked, have the Morocco Orndorff ending of the Savage Orndorff. Just give him another, maybe 2 minutes to let some stuff happen. But to sit there and have, like, I used to blame, I don't say blame Savage, I shouldn't say that. But for years, I always said that, Savage is still doing the whole Memphis shtick. He hasn't really gotten into the WWF way of thinking. And now, JR, after we've done our vaults, I completely 180 that. Savage was already ready.
Yeah.
But he had to deal with this fucking bullshit of three, not one, not two, three fucking turnbuckle styrofoam to the eyes. Three!
And then the flowers.
Flowers. You know? And then to kick out at on the elbow. Who the fuck does he get off?
Dismissively, yeah.
All right, Hogan, that's one thing. And on house shows, that shit's forgotten. Unless you're in the MSG area. Unless you're in the tri-state area like us or whatever, you don't see that. Maybe they did it in some other markets, maybe not. But on national TV, or on, closed circuit around the world, or around the country at least, you have this fucking goof kicking out of your Intercontinental Champion's finisher, and then end up getting fucking pinned anyway on a throwaway roll-up. Old school, second straight year, by the way, that the Intercontinental Champion won with the exact same kind of pin. And then, of course, last year it got reversed. Thank God it wasn't this year. But to take a guy like that and you're elevating him to levels that you need him to get as 1986 progresses. Yeah, he won the match. That's fine. And for 1986 standards, maybe we're overthinking it a bit. But I am not going to take the booking off the hook for this crap that made Savage look like a complete schlub. And he should have won clean, too. Who gives a fuck about George Steele, for God's sakes? Fucking 50 years old at this point, or where the hell he was. He wasn't doing anything. He was a cheap parlor trick.
Yeah, they're not going to give him the belt.
I mean, all they did on TNT was make fun of him and have the fucking Dr. Ziff and the, oh no, brown cow, and all those garbage segments. And you have him kick out of the finisher? Fuck that. I wonder if that was even an audible.
No.
I wonder if he audibled
it. I don't think so. I think it was probably the point. They didn't seem to really respect the elbow at this point. I mean, I think it probably gains traction, but I mean, he hasn't really used it to win any big matches. And the biggest matches he's had, guys, are just blown out of it. I mean, Steele kicking out at one is ridiculous. And
it's ridiculous.
I mean, I think we could. Absolutely. I think we could probably end the show right now, by the way, Scott, that you finally have come around in the Savage Memphis stalling. It's like the biggest revelation in Place to Be podcast history. So that's done. We could put that to bed. I don't know. I don't know what. I guess they just really wanted to do the Beauty and the Beast fucking storyline. I don't know, whatever, like where the King Kong, whatever it is, where he's just obsessed with a beautiful woman and Savage is the true monster. You know, it's like, I guess they just were obsessed with doing the story. I don't know. I don't know what it is. And it doesn't end here, sadly. We got a lot more to talk about, but
I mean, Savage still. I mean, he's still, I think, working out. I will say this: I'm not going to totally say that. Oh my God, he did work it out as the year progressed. He still did have some, but this specific template, that wasn't the problem. The problem was his opponent was a big pile of shit. But there's no doubt that Savage just continues to improve and adapt to the WWF style. And did kind of bail out of the stalling because he did have that problem. It's not a secret. But what I'm saying, my revelation now is that's not the reason this match sucked. The reason this match sucked is because his opponent was a fucking pile of crap. So anyway, Randy Savage retains the Intercontinental Championship, thank God. I gave it a dud, Johnny. I mean, JR, you're being nice tonight to even give it a full star.
Half a star.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. I give it a half two just for Macho.
I mean, it's, you know, he's working out there. He's trying, and the story's fine. Like, they really did okay. Well, like I said, the smoke and mirrors behind it. They really did okay with it. Like, you know, in a vacuum. What's more infuriating is where the stage is and how they've wasted Savage here. Like, to me, that's a bigger problem. Like, the match itself is what it is. It's probably best case scenario for these two. But to me, the bigger issue is that this is even
leading up to it when there was a couple good things when Steel was sent when she got the flowers with the turnbuckle stuff in it, and it was a decent angle.
Yeah, the angle itself and the storyline was fine.
Yeah.
But on a huge stage like this, to throw out an utter piece of garbage like this match was, is just unacceptable. Yeah. So, anyway, JR, we move on.
Yeah, we do move on. We go to Chicago again, where Gene is talking to John Studd and Bill Frelick about the big battle royal. More on that later. We then head back to the ring, where our old friend George Wells is taking on the recently debuted Jake the Snake Roberts, who gets a big showcase match here at WrestleMania. I thought it was smart. You know, we saw it a year ago with, like, Ricky Steamboat, where he debuted a few weeks before Mania. Then they stuck him out there and gave him a big, nice win. And they do the same thing with Jake. Squeeze him in right before Mania and then have him go out and have a good, solid match here. Wells keep doing his thing month in and month out. Gets rewarded with a big payday. And sadly, he does not have on his number 69 cutoff yet again. Jake power walks out and slings his sack into the corner. Wells attacks at the bell and punches away and levies more strikes until Jake goes to the gut and shoots him outside. Roberts comes out after him but catches a hard right hand to the face. Back inside, Wells lands a shoulder block as Vince notes Wells' CFL career, calls him one of the greats up there. Wells is all over Roberts, who never got on track at all, and then takes him over the big head scissors. Wells slams Jake as Vince says he's gained 20 to 30 pounds to bulk up, which seems about right to me. Wells catches Jake with a knee lift as Vince thinks he's being too methodical about things. Wells cracks Jake with a power slam for two, but Jake slides outside to catch a breather. Wells follows him out, and as he heads back in, Jake smashes him with a knee lift, picks him up, and buries him with the DDT for the win. After the match, Jake empties a snake on Wells as Susan just freaks out. This is a fun match. Wells looked pretty sharp on offense. Jake was pretty much on defense the whole match, but the win looked good as he bided his time, waited, and then suckered Wells in and finished him with his lethal finisher. I thought it was a nice showing for Snake, and Wells probably took too much of the offense considering his level of talent, but I liked Jake's quick flash win. It really, to me, it established a finisher better, that he can smack you in the head and then hit it and win. So I went a star. Match of the night so far for this one, Scott.
Yeah, I gave it a star as well. And George Wells, I think he didn't have the 69 shirt, and he totally even had new pants. Usually, as we've watched him on our garden shows, JR, he usually has the white pants with Master P, the No Limit Soldier, on the side.
Yes.
Now he had nothing. They were blue. They were powder blue. They were fucking hanging off his gut. It's like he found them in the back somewhere. But the match was good. I mean, you know, for what it was. What I particularly liked, I like Jake's fluidity in the ring. He's very smooth. You know, he's got good cadence in the ring in terms of moving around the ring, and he's not clunky. He may not execute a lot of moves, and he sells pretty well, and we'll notice that down the line about him in that aspect. That's one of his strengths, in my opinion. Just very fluid. No wasted motion, sliding around and let George Wells look a little good. And it showed that literally Jake Roberts could beat you like that. You could beat the snot out of him as long as you want. All he needs is, out of nowhere, put his head in the front face lock and drop you like a rock. That's what was being booked. That was the great storytelling in this match. Again, the work rate was what it was. A star is about all you can do, but you at least saw an inkling of what would be to come from Jake the Snake. Either way, heel, face, whatever. He's just very silky smooth in the ring. He moves around well, and he can hit that DDT, which finally somebody got right, because every house show and every show I've watched, people give it different letters, GDT, GDA, ERA, WWE, NWO, whatever. They always get the letters wrong. But I was very impressed with Jake in this match, because he gave George Wells you know, some moves. And George Wells did, you know, it's George Wells. I mean, you know, you get that much out of him.
But more than some moves. I mean, George Wells pretty much, I mean, it was his match. He dominated the whole match, and then Jake just snuck in the win. So he gave him more than a few.
Yeah, he gave him a good run, and but the whole setup was he could hit that thing literally out of nowhere, and the snake at the end was great. And then John, to talk more about Entendres, at one point when the snake's on, and I think Greeny, I think you caught it, we all caught it the other night when Vince goes, Susan, does it remind you of anything?
Oh my god,
where did that come from? Jesus, your thoughts on the match?
Does it remind you of Dick?
I felt about George Wells about the same as you did. I heard you trashing him on one of the last house shows. He literally gets the worst babyface reaction of all time. There's like no reaction. he comes to the ring looking half asleep, like, you know, like a diabetic, like he just took a sleep apnea mask off. He's a heavy mouth breather and shit. But with all that, this is probably like the best match of his career. He must have got his insulin shot, and he got out there, and Jake gave him a good 2-3 minutes of offense. So this is like the best match of all time, man, for Wells, because Jake hardly did nothing until the DDT, and to make Wells look alive, that was something else. Because also Wells got like that lazy eye, like Bill Cosby.
Maybe it's that eye injury. It never totally healed.
Every time you look at him, he looks out of breath. He's a mouth breather. Man. It's like unbelievable. Man.
I mean, the eye thing might be legit. I mean, that might have been from the injury because that's what knocked him out for a while. But yeah, he is. I mean, he has put on a ton of weight since we started watching these. I mean, I remember the first time we saw him on the show, it was like, oh, he's not that bad. He's better than I thought. And it has been a slow deterioration ever since that injury.
At first, he had like a football body, but then he like morphed into like a
football gut,
offensive lineman.
Football shaped gut.
Yeah, pretty much.
And like you said, Jay, Vince stole Gorilla's line. He's like, oh, Wells put on 20 or 30 pounds.
But
once again, guys, the booking. I mean, they should have swapped him. The last month would have been the perfect match with Lanny as far as a better babyface. At least Lanny could have got out there and fired up the crowd a little. We got a little reaction. He could have read a poem. And, I don't know if he could have showed his talents because there are too many kids out there. But he could have read a poem saying, violets are blue, roses are red. I'm going to give myself some head. And,
would have been the snake versus the snake. Poffo's not even on this card, huh? They could have at least snuck him in the Battle Royal.
Yeah, he wasn't in the Battle Royal, huh? No, I guess he wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, but Wells got no reaction. But with that, he gave him a hot couple minutes. And Jake was generous because Jake didn't really do much until the DDTs. So it worked
Vince
out for one star.
A hot couple minutes, apparently.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Oh,
give
my
it a star.
God.
Vince, Susan, does this look like Damien? Oh, my God. What a mess.
And at the end, Wells got like a spit drool kind of foamy combo. So. And I bet in the back, like this is 1986, so like George Scott and like one of the other questionable agents back there, they probably had like a dollar bet, like the guys in Trading Places saying, "Oh, I bet the black guy's gonna be afraid of the snake," you know. George Scott and Terry Garvin had like a dollar bet.
Maybe when the
two old fucks in Trading Places.
Maybe when the white stuff came out, that's what Vince said. Don't look like anything, Susan.
Look at that snake now. All right, we get a quite quick hype video recap from Mr. T versus Roddy Piper. We then head to L.A., where Jesse Ventura interviews Hulk Hogan to talk about his big cage match tonight with the WWF title on the line. Hogan talks about the match and predicts that T will beat Piper as well, and that's where we head next, back to Long Island, for our big boxing match. Of course, all residual from last year's WrestleMania. We've talked about it leading up to this one. Bob Orton took up boxing. We get the challenge on Piper's Pit. We saw what happened on Saturday's main event, T versus Orton there. We had the whipping of the weightlifting belt. And then, of course, Piper and Orton shaving the head of Mr. T's friend, the Haiti Kid, into the shape of a mohawk. And this is reignited to open 1986, a huge marquee showdown. This one filled with celebrities. first match of the night that they're really overflowing. We get the judges, the trainers, meant to be a huge mainstream draw. Joan fucking Rivers comes out as the ring announcer. I actually thought she was pretty good. She intros the guest judges, Daryl Dawkins, Chocolate Thunder, Cab Calloway, the most random fucking WrestleMania celebrity of all time. And G. Gordon Liddy, another fucking gem. And the guest timekeeper is Herb, who, believe it or not, I thought got one of the biggest fucking pops of the night in Long Island. I mean, that guy was super over. What the hell? Burger King, right? Was Herb?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yep. Was he that big in 1980? I mean, he like outpops everyone else on this in this fucking arena on this night.
I'm trying to vaguely remember. I mean, Johnny, I don't even remember the commercial. So I don't even, I mean,
yeah, for a hot
I don't even remember.
He was just kind of like a nerd. I don't even think he ever said anything. For a hot couple months, he was
he was hot.
Yeah,
but
and then Clara Pella, I think she was supposed to say "Where's the beef?" on the microphone. She had like a microphone, but then I don't think it worked because you saw her just like waving a microphone.
She waved it around. Yeah, she
you
was cool.
Didn't hear nothing about it. Yeah, where's the beef?
She was still alive when they got to her on camera.
She's like, here's the beef.
Tinchoka Thunder's pants.
All right. So anyway, Herb.
Well, before you move on, JR, yeah. I just got to say real quick, watching the shows leading up in between, and hearing. Like I'm watching the weekend episodes of Championship Wrestling leading up to this, and Alfred was doing the reports, the updates, and he's listing all of the celebrities. And hearing Alfred do Chocolate Thunder, Daryl Dawkins, I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if Alfred even wonders why his name is Chocolate Thunder. Why is this man Chocolate Thunder? I wonder. Yeah. Anyway, I'd have to say that. That was very funny that all the times that Alfred would list the celebrities in the weeks leading up that – he had to say Chocolate Thunder. I'm sure he had no idea what the hell it even meant. It was pretty funny, but
this fight fight set for 10 rounds. Piper's let out by Duva and Orton, getting doused in booze as normal. Mr. T, Smoke and Joe Frazier, and Haiti Kid jog out to a pop as well. And I thought, like I said, Joan Rivers was pretty good during the intros. We get all the instructions and the feeling out before round one gets underway. Vince talks about Piper's reach advantage. So we get some dancing and jab attempts before T gets a quick flurry to the gut. Repeat that sequence. But this time, Piper lands a late jab during the break. The bout continues with more flurries of offense on and off, with T landing at least one big shot. We get some tie-ups late. That takes us to the end of round one, with both men having to be pulled apart. Piper comes over and jaws at T during the break and gets cheered for it. Round two starts with T pointing out the glob of salve on Piper's head, which the official then cleans up. Susan tries to add some analysis here, but that goes nowhere fast. Like, she's really trying to do, like, boxing analysis, and it's awful. The two trade more flurries, and this time Piper is the aggressor. Piper hammers away in the corner, but T fights back and eventually finds his way out of trouble. Susan keeps saying, "Come on, T," as Piper smacks him around. Eventually drops him with a big right hand to the side of the head. T gets up at 8, but the crowd is just fully behind Piper here. Piper works over T some more. T falls to his knees as the bell sounds. Piper kicks T, and both men head to the corner to regroup. Orton comes over to the corner and pours a bucket of water on T, who fucking falls out of his seat on the mat for some reason. He just looks like a goof in a lot of this. Round three opens up with the arrogant Piper dancing and toying with T. T comes back with body blows and works Roddy over in the corner with some body shots and blows to the head, knocks Piper to his ass. Piper gets up at 8. Things get underway again. Piper's wobbly as T keeps working him over and then decks him with a hook that knocks Piper all the way to the floor. Orton helps Piper get his bearings and get back inside, where he's up at 9. Piper holds up onto T to wrap up the round, and Susan says Piper is desperate here, and they should watch out because he could do something unsavory. T walks over to Piper and talks shit during the break, but Piper chucks his stool at T's legs to open up round 4. Piper then smacks T with a right hand, and that leads to the two trading hard blows right in the middle of the ring. Piper heats up and unloads, but T comes right back as the crowd is now buzzing. Piper rocks T with a right hand, but T comes back with a big hooked shot to the head. T backs Piper to the corner, but Piper shoves the ref and then body slams T to draw the DQ. The two brawl as everyone comes in the ring to break things up. I just was fine as a spectacle. It dragged here and there, but it was good enough. T did look like a goof, like I said, at times, especially when he fell off the stool. It was good use of Piper. It ties into the T and his past, and they booked the finish fine, as Piper's not going to lose, and T isn't got a job. It's also a good spot to load in all the celebrities to make it feel like a big deal. Like, it feels like a big-time boxing match, having all the celebrities there around ringside. This is a fine idea. This should be it for Piper T, at least for a while. If not at all altogether. I went 2 stars on this. Again, it you know, could have been more, and when you look at the card that led up to it, you want it to be more. But I thought it probably went nearly as well as it could have gone, all things considered, John.
I think that's a little too generous. I go about a half only for Piper. And
oh wow,
two things stood out on this one. Piper is in so much better shape than TT. He was cooked halfway through round one. TT was exhausted, and Piper, his punches were way more professional. I mean, it's hard it must be harder to do fake boxing than fake wrestling, but Piper at least had some amateur background, and his punches at least look real. T could barely put his hands up. His like punches were like side to side. They didn't look professional at all. Piper's punches were way better. And also, what stuck out for me is it was like round two when Piper got the advantage. The crowd really started getting on Roddy, getting on the Roddy train. There was loud Roddy chants. And when the DQ was announced, there was more boos. T had lost the crowd, I think, by now. I think T's was more of a being with Hogan that he got that big reaction in the Mania before that. And I think by this time T had kind of died down with the A team and all that. So this is definitely, and Vince was right there. And when he heard that, when them chanted for Roddy, I think Vince made the decision right then that
right.
That's it for Roddy as a heel. We're turning him and also they responded because he was in much better shape and T was cooked. There really wasn't much reason to cheer for T because his punches didn't look all that strong.
I have a question about T and the usage of him in a moment. I want to hear Scott's thoughts on the match, and then I want to have a quick discussion on T. Go ahead, Scott.
Definitely.
Well, the big thing out of this was I gave it 2 stars because it was very entertaining. I did enjoy the entertainment factor of it, and I think that was one of the main reason why I gave it as high a grade as it seems. T was just not ready for this. He looked like a guy who never boxed a match before, even fake. And Piper, I think deep down, Piper really took this seriously, and I think he was just fed up with T. I think he was fed up with Vince having him in the company. I'm just going to end this, and I'm going to end it my way. And I think that's why Piper looked so good in this match in terms of being professional, looking like he knows what he's doing. And I think that's why the crowd turned. I think Piper, they were getting to the point where Piper was actually entertaining. And it's one thing to go after other baby faces. It's another thing to go after a celebrity. I think wrestling fans at this point really didn't care. T was alone in 1986. He wasn't siphoning off Hogan like he was in 1985. Piper was Piper. And I think by now, fans realized Piper was pretty cool. And he was just cooked. I mean, he couldn't lift his arms, and by the second round, he was like a lumbering. I mean, I think speaking of mouth breathers, D'Amato, I think he was in worse shape than George Wells was. Yes. I mean, it was he was a disaster. He couldn't even lift his arms up, and even Vince calls out that he's very arm heavy. He was arm heavy 2 minutes into round one.
Yeah, I think they misjudged T's popularity. And also, let's not ignore the elephant in the room. This is 1986, and the 99% of the crowd is a
bunch of Guidos
from the Isle of Caucasia.
So, I think that's partially it, but I also think that I just think they were done with T, and I think Vince realized, all right, I pretty much milked as much I can out of this guy. And also, as times progressed, I think Vince realized that. Maybe the celebrities is a little too much in terms of the in-ring portion. It's fine to have them as window dressing like they did around this match, but Piper definitely is getting that feeling from the crowd that they want to cheer him, and he's actually becoming cool as a heel, and his lines are good, and everything's working out for him.
His
right
lines
now
are good, all right. That's
a big part of that too. probably wasn't the only one. But like Johnny said, I think it was on this night that Vince realized, wow, I think I got me something here, and he takes his vacation to go make whatever the hell he makes, Hell Comes to Frog Town or whatever the hell it was, and then things change for him even by the summertime. So, but I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was entertaining enough and fun, but T's done. He's cooked. I think Vince is.
Well, so that was going to be my ask, I guess. I mean, I guess we've kind of covered it, but like, do you think they went to the T well one too many times? Like, are you okay with, yes, he's cooked here, he's done, but are you okay with the fact that they did it? Or do you think that they should have just kind of let T go after one and focused Piper on something else? Because I do think T was maybe to the well one too many times, but I think it was a good match for Piper because he's not going to fight Hogan again. and you kind of look up and down the face side, unless you do him and Orndorff here.
Yes, yes, him and Orndorff versus Ace and Piper. That would have been
You could have done T and Orndorff versus Ace and Piper. Yeah, that's possible too. But if you don't want to do T at all, you could have done Piper Orndorff.
Good luck with that chemistry there.
But, I mean, you could have just done Piper Orndorff straight up. Or you also could have just, you know, if you look at that, other than that, like, what else do you do with Piper? Why not just bring T back, have this, and you know, arguably it's probably the biggest possible match Piper could have had. It's good mainstream coverage for him, all the celebrities. It makes him feel like he's up there with the other stars that are getting the big marquee matches. So in a way, even though T is kind of cooked, I'm kind of glad they gave Piper the shot, because you could argue maybe with the Battle Royal and the main event, it's probably the third biggest match that they had lined up.
Yeah. But with the tag, it would still have been T in there, and you had the three veterans to make it more reasonable. The match itself would have been more easy on the eyes.
Yeah,
with three professionals in there.
I didn't know if the boxing thing though was more of a unique thing that would stand out when it comes to, like, media coverage or whatever. Like, you know, boxing, Mr. T's boxing.
Instead of just another tag, they needed something special for...
Right. Because, yeah, you know, T is looked at, you know, for better or worse, as a boxer, even though he never was, really. But, you know, I think that's... Nah. To me, that's probably what they were thinking. Like, hey, we can load the celebrities, make it stand out. Piper's going outside his element. And then they kind of got the best of both worlds, because Piper got over more than T, which is always ideal for the guy who's sticking around, and it, you know, gave them a reason to turn him. So any thoughts, final thoughts on T, Scott?
No, I do think that, there was enough left for him to this point, but it was evident that this needs to be it. But yeah, Piper needed to be in something kind of alternative to everything else. There really was no other baby face for him to face right now. I even think they kind of went to the well through with Piper and Orndorff. I think it was a good time for Piper to take a time off and kind of be away for a little bit. But yeah, T definitely had some left up to now, but now he's done. Now there's nothing. You don't need him in the ring or doing anything else anymore and start a feud with another heel or whatever. No, he's finished. He's finished. And speaking of finished, we're finished in this building.
Yeah.
We are done with Long
Thank
Island
God.
For the evening.
Terrible,
yeah.
Terrible fucking
But I
stuff.
Definitely, yeah, it's bad. Yeah, it's bad. And I think a lot of it was, again, because I think they were concerned about the flow and the timing of the show as it went along.
Everything's rushed. And it gets worse now. I mean, the rushing gets worse here.
Yeah, right. Because we now move about 1,000 miles west, maybe a little more than that, to Chicago, to the Rosemont Horizon, JR, and set the scene for us at the Rosemont.
Yeah, we
are. Our announcers.
Yes, Gorilla Monsoon, Mean Gene Okerlund, and Kathy Lee Crosby. Scott, you want to tell us who Kathy Lee was?
Well, Kathy Lee Crosby was a very well-known actress. She was the tri-host of That's Incredible, which was one of those kind of funky, you know, kind of Ripley's Believe It or Not-ish kind of shows. It was her, Kathy Lee Crosby, John Davidson, and Fran Tarkenton, ex Vikings and Giants quarterback. She was also in a very memorable movie. Johnny may remember this movie called Coach, where she played it was every high school athlete's like ultimate dream. She played a hot, I think it was a gym teacher, or basketball coach. And she falls for one of the basketball players, and they have this torrid affair. And for those that know Kathy Lee Crosby looked like in 19, I think that movie came out a little bit earlier, like 1980, 81. If you know what she looks like, then you do know that you would have had no problem doing something naughty with your gym teacher, because she was pretty hot. But she was on TV a lot, and most recently here she was on a show called That's Incredible with Fran Tarkenton and John Davidson. So okay. She tries her hardest. She's obviously just as dumb to the business as Susan St. James was, but she seems to make in my opinion, more of an effort here.
She was the least annoying out of the three.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
And Gorilla seems to overpower. Vince worked a bit to include Susan in the conversation. Gorilla, I mean, he doesn't really engage Kathy too much. Gene does a little bit, but she's pretty much just interjects where she can.
because Gene wanted to engage something probably more right. later on, most likely. So.
I think at the end of the night, too, I want to talk about the commentary pairing so, you know, we can mm-hmm. cover off, like, maybe who should have been where. So, Chet Kopic, the ring announcer here in Chi-Town. We open up with a big women's title match, the Fabulous Moolah defending her title against Velvet McIntyre. Velvet gets this big title match with zero hype or build, and no, you know, last time we saw her, she was getting her shit pushed in by was it the Crush Girls that she fight, or was she against Bull and Dump? I forget which.
She was, well, she's a baby face, and it was probably Bull and Dump.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. The Crush Girls was Judy and.
That's right. Desiree, whatever her name was.
Desiree.
No, not Desiree. It was,
Sandy Mitchell, Sandy yeah. Beach, whatever
Penny,
her name
Penny,
was.
Penny Mitchell.
Penny Mitchell. Penny Marshall. It was Velvet and whoever against
Diane Lane.
Against Dump. Yeah.
all right. So Velvet, yes, is done nothing. Here she is. A huge heat on Moolah, struts around with her usual arrogance, knowing that she has Velvet back in the cage after the match anyway in her truck. Moolah whips Velvet around off the bell, slugs her down with some punches. Velvet ducks a clothesline and comes back with a pair of one-legged drop kicks. Velvet slams Moolah but misses a splash, and Moolah covers for the win. A worthless waste of time. Why fucking bother? Moolah gets booed heavily. Velvet just looks like an idiot. The match only goes 53 seconds. Complete waste of time. We don't need squash women's matches out there just to fill spots. Cut this card down. I guess we'll talk about that at the end, too. But just, ugh, blech, dud, Scott.
There's really nothing more to say. It sucked. I gave it a dud as well. Let's preserve our time for better stuff. Johnny?
Well, yeah, it's a dud. But you notice when Velvet missed a dive and she landed right on she landed right on her tits. I mean,
yeah.
She just took a direct shot. And they looked like they popped out. And I think she kind of panicked and said, go home, because she either panicked because she lost her breath, got the wind knocked out of her, or she was panicking because her tits were popped out.
So you think you think it was supposed to go longer?
Yeah, and I think she just panicked and said, go, because also she had her foot on the rope and nobody said anything. You know, the ref, you know, usually Gorilla would have been all over that, but nobody said anything. So, I think it was supposed to go longer. And she panicked when she landed on her tates there. And and another thing that's annoying, I mean, Velvet, bare feet are annoying. Unless you're a stereotypical Asian that uses your karate moves or a Samoan island, there's no reason for her to be barefoot. But it was a shit show, yeah. But I think that's what happened.
You know, you're not making many friends on Twitter, John, with those comments.
Is this going to be your autobiography, losing your breath or losing your breast? yeah, it was dreadful.
They need a challenger for Moolah in the worst. I mean, the women of Japan, I don't think, are sticking around, really. So it's like, what do we have right now? With Wendy gone, we're parading out still having a women's division, but there's really no one that's capturing the imagination at all on the women's point of view. In the division. So we could use a challenger to step up here for Moolah sometime soon. If we're going to keep the shit show going. I mean, we could just get rid of it, but.
Well, we kind of talked about that back in November 85 when we were having our discussion about Wendy, and should they even bother at this point, you know? Are there any women left? Do you turn Judy Martin face? I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah. Very unusual. What to do.
Right, yeah. I mean, Judy Martin's great, but she's the heel, too. They're not going to have it. Yeah, I mean, maybe she could have turned face and feuded, but anyway. All right, let's move along. Gene asked Kathy Lee to weigh in on the chances of the football players, but she says she chooses the wrestlers in the Battle Royal due to their size. Our next match is a big international battle, Scott. It's a rematch of one we saw recently on Saturday Night's Main Event, and that is Corporal Kirchner taking on Nikolai Volkov here in a flag match. Big international battle continues on. The old foes reunite. Volkov and Blassie get booed soundly by the hot Chicago crowd, especially during the national anthem. Kirchner gets a nice pop as he marches out toting the American flag. We get a loud USA chant as Nikolai attacks Kirchner at the bell, kicks away before pitching him outside. Nikolai follows out and runs Kirchner into the post and then bites his face. Nikolai shoves him into the post again, busting him open, and heads back inside. Kirchner crawls in and punches his way back into things, but accidentally bumps the ref. The two continue to slug away, but Kirchner catches Blassie's cane that he throws into the air and blasts Nikolai with it for the win and the massive pop. The Chicago crowd is jacked. They're like dying for something to cheer for, and they get it here where Kirchner gets to wave the flag and parade around. Again, a nothing match. They got no time. This parade of disappointment so far that's been WrestleMania. But both guys showed a lot of energy. I thought they looked fine, but they just gave no time to work with. So a slight bump for the blood, the energy, and the pop for Kirchner. I went a half a star. Johnny?
Nah, this is a Dudaruni because Blassie, unfortunately, this is probably one of his last matches. I mean, he would soon sell out to Slickster, but I mean, Nikolai was like stunned. I wasn't even looking for it. Blassie like didn't even make a look at it. He threw the cane like directly at Hershey. Right. It was so bad. Kind of like 10 years later, Scott, in your Last Day of Glory, when Neil O'Donnell hit James Washington right in the numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
With your last good day of football. That you'll
exactly,
see,
yeah. It was Larry Brown, it was Larry Brown. The other one, he already went to the Redskins, and his career went in the toilet after that. But
there wasn't much with this. Gorilla said, "Oh, Nikolai could be banished to Siberia if he loses." That was my favorite quote in the match. But
the crowd was into it though, man. They were pumped for Kirchner winning. They were, like I said, they were dying for anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost was going to give this a half star. I just couldn't. I another dud. That's three duds for me tonight. I mean, it was bad. Corbel Kirchner is
bizarre, Scott. You watch all these matches on MSG and everything else. It was just as good as some of these other ones that we've seen.
This he was clueless. I mean, he was clueless. He was better. The problem was, JR, I thought he was better on the Saturday's Main Event Peace match than he was here.
Yeah.
He was clueless.
Yeah, I mean, they worked
no
that one differently with all the mat work and stuff. But
yeah, this was a mess. This was a mess. And it was evident. I'm surprised that Kirchner even won, to be honest with you. I think Vince has given up on him.
That's probably his last win he ever gets.
I think from
what you guys will see. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I think his wanting to be the, you know, the next
Slaughter.
You know, Sergeant Slaughter is done. I think it's done. It's not going to happen. And I think he had to win this match. But I mean. We thought Long Island was fast. What was this match like? 250 something? I mean, it's
yeah, we're
flying. Ludicrous.
Yeah. 134. Yeah, 134. These two matches together were under 2.5 minutes. Yes.
That's asinine. I mean, that's really asinine. I don't know why. I mean, they must have. I guess the bigger thing was not hitting Chicago's start time, but definitely hitting LA start time. They really must have had to hit that right. But this was a mess. I mean, this was an absolute mess, and did nothing for either guy. Kirbel Kirchner won, but nobody cares. It's a dud. It's not good. Not good at all. And we'll say, and I agree with you, Johnny, as JR, you and I move ahead through the, back to our home office at the Garden for the next several months. I don't think we either don't see him, or when we do, it's going to be in something utterly useless and trashy. I mean, honestly, besides the Nikolai stuff, he's been tagging with Spivey. I mean, that's pretty, I don't know if that's more to try to get Spivey over, but I would find somebody better for him than Kirchner, but he's dead. He's dead in the water right now, even with this match.
All right, let's
so
move along.
So now, JR, we get to the finally some of the big back-to-back big stuff. We're starting to get into the meat and potatoes here.
Well, it's interesting. We got a question from a listener that we could talk about later. And to me, this is kind of where it starts, the question, like here to the end of the show. So Gene heads to the ring, and he's the ring announcer. He's over Chet Kopic to announce the competitors for the Battle Royal, which is now here, mixing NFL and WWF stars. This is a good booking choice. A lot of star power and uniqueness. It really shows the size and prowess of the wrestlers. Good city of choice as well. Of course, football is smoking hot in Chicago, coming off the Bears Super Bowl win. Clara Peller announces the guest timekeeper, and this is what you said earlier, John, where she just swings the microphone around.
She was here. Sorry, she was here. Yeah. I don't want to get correct. I don't want to get corrected. She wasn't in NASA. She was here. Right.
The tweet's already been punched. Dick Butkus and Ed Too Tall Jones, the special guest referees, as the ring fills up. Gene introduces them one by one. We have Jimbo Covert, Pedro Morales, Tony Atlas, Ted Arcidi, Harvey Martin, Dan Spivey, Hillbilly Jim, King Tonga, Iron Sheik, Ernie Holmes, Killer Bees, Big John Studd, Bill Frelick, the Hart Foundation, Russ Francis, Bruno Sammartino, Refrigerator Perry, and Andre the Giant. And I thought Bruno got a pretty soft pop during his entrance. They didn't really seem to care much for him in Chicago. You wonder if they should have had him in New York. Great heat on Sheik and silence for the NFL players, except for Fridge, who gets a massive ovation.
Yeah, they were waiting for the Fridge, man. And they saved it all for the Fridge.
Yeah, they didn't care much about the others. And Sheik had good heat, I thought, as well. And then Andre gets a good pop, of course. A cool show of the entrances to put over the importance of the match instead of just having them in the ring. I thought that was cool. Ernie Ladd joins the commentary team as the match gets underway. Of course, former NFL player. Gorilla announces that the combined weight of everyone in the ring is 5,612 pounds. They all put on a little bit of weight. We get the usual Battle Royal action to start with everyone mixing it up along with some teases. A few people go right at Fridge, but he survives. Colbert and Tonga tangle on the ropes, but both get pushed out. Surprisingly quick exit for Tonga, who's been pretty pushed over the last couple of months. Bees and Hearts work together wherever they can. Holmes gets shoved out as Andre and Stud trade big blows in the corner. Brunzell gets dumped as the action continues. Pretty active, I thought, at this point for a battle royal. The crowd chants for Fridge as he tangles with Stud. Atlas gets pushed out as Andre swats away Harvey Martin. Pedro and Martin tangle near the ropes and eliminate each other. Blair survives a triple team led by Arcidi, and then he helps Spivey and Hibbley gently push Arcidi, very gently push Arcidi to the floor in case he fucking explodes on the way down. Sheik ducks Spivey and backdrops into the floor and then tosses Hibbley and Blair at the same time. Things have whittled down as Freilich gets chucked out by a few guys, and Bruno tosses the Sheik. Bruno charges Stud and hammers away, but Stud withstands and knocks Bruno out of the ring. The Hearts double-team Fridge, and he swats both guys away and then squares off with Stud, barreling him into him with a football tackle to a massive pop. Stud drills him with a back elbow and hip-tosses Fridge out of the ring to loud boos. Fridge offers a handshake to Stud, who accepts arrogantly but gets yanked out to a big pop, and that leaves Andre, Bret Hart, Jim Neidhart, and Russ Francis as the final four. I thought it was a good call to have an NFL guy hang around. It was also equally as smart to have Fridge go out so he doesn't siphon off the pot for Andre. Andre gets tied up in the ring in the ropes. The Hearts double team and then toss out Francis easily. The Hearts work over Andre in the corner. They have the giant rocking but can't finish him. Andre eventually levels Hart with a heavy boot to the face and then beats on them both. Andre kicks Anvil in the face, sending him comically stumbling around and eventually over the top to the floor. One of those ridiculous eliminations ever. Hart goes to the top rope, but Andre grabs him and throws him onto Anvil to win the match. I'll say this is a really fun battle royal. It never dragged, never lingered, had the perfect booking across the board. I thought it was a smart use of the NFL guys. It was cool having Andre get the big win. It was a neat moment. Keeps his legend as king of the battle royal going. And I thought Ladd was great on commentary. He added a lot of value as a former wrestler and football player. And I thought even Kathy Lee wasn't bad here. I went 2.5 for this whole package. I thought it was a lot of fun. My favorite match of the night so far, Scott.
This battle royal was tremendous. A couple of things I got out of it. Number one, I almost got the feeling that we were going to, as we've been talking about the passing of the torch of one celebrity to another, I almost thought to myself, I wonder if they were thinking of the Fridge for future appearances. He was kind of, when he tossed the Bret and Anvil out of the corner right before he got eliminated, the place went fucking crazy. I would not have been surprised if whoever was the agent in charge in Chicago, called Vince and said, talk to Ditka and these guys and see if we can borrow Fridge for some summer stuff. You know what I mean? I would not have been surprised. That's how hot he was that night. Number two, it's pretty obvious that Andre is slowly descending in terms of his in-ring work. I mean, he looked that like pained look on his face at the end was not kayfabe. I can tell you that right now. He was definitely hurting. There's no doubt about that. Bruno had a good showing. Yeah, there were a few good showings. And it was just fun. I enjoyed the football players. They took it seriously. It didn't look like a big, ugly, boring flop fest. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it very much. It was one of the better battle royals. I'll give it 2.5 stars. And I think if they ever want to book a battle royal, particularly with guys that aren't comfortable in the ring, if they use celebrities and stuff, I would use the WrestleMania 2 template. I think the football players took it very seriously. I think the Freilich should have worn a shirt that said Stud the Dud. I think it would have been a lot of fun. They really got into it. I was impressed. I was very impressed. Surprisingly, even back then, and surprised now how much the football players took it seriously.
I'm surprised they haven't tried. They keep trying to bring athletes in, and a lot of athletes are fans. I know a lot have like these contracts where they can't do this shit. I mean, back then, no one really cared, but it would have been cool if they could do something like that these days with not just football players, but whatever, athletes for WWE and just throw them in a battle royal. Like, to me, that's one of the smartest ways to do it because you can protect them all and not have them lose but still focus on them. What'd you think of this one, John?
I think when eventually PTBN does the rankings of WrestleMania Battle Royals, this will be definitely near the top. I go with three on this. This was better than I remembered even. And the MVP was John Studd, under the radar. He did all the work for Andre, and he gave Fridge his shine, and also he dumped most of the guys. And for me, the two of the football players that stood out were Fridge, obviously, but Bill Frelick, he acted like he belonged there. I mean, some of the other football players, the way they dressed and come to the ring, they looked a little out of place, a little out of shape. But Frelick, I got it. You know, he was going out with Studd, calling him the Dud in the interviews, and he could have had a future in there. But later down the line, it turned out he was like an anti-steroid guy with the NFL, and he spoke out against steroids in the hearing. So that would definitely disqualify him for any sort of business more in the WWF. But this was a very impressive. The battle where things kept moving, and like I said, that stuck out with me too. Although that Anvil elimination, like when Andre hits the boot in the middle of the ring, and Anvil has to do like a Three Stooges flop outside the ring. That was
it's ridiculous. He like runs around in a circle and then like goes to the ropes and throws himself out. It was really bad.
And also to reiterate, Scott, that Fridge, when he tackled the Hearts, the place went ballistic on that. That was a legit crowd pop. Fridge really got it. Like, his entrance was second to last, and when he, you know, he jumped, he did a little jump off the top rope. The only thing was Fridge's his choice of uniform. That he wore like a onesie, like the original romp him or something.
He really did. It looked like a fucking. It was a tank top in with thong. It was.
Yeah, and the football pants, the elastic wasn't working too well, so Fridge was sporting a little crack there. He was showing the Fridge had some cracks in it. That was the only demerit against the Fridge. But otherwise, I really enjoyed this.
Do you think it was smart at the end how they dumped Fridge out to kind of keep him away from Andre winning? Like, because they could have kept him in, and then if Andre throws him out to win or something,
they
could
put him over all the way. They put him over enough, but then they showed, hey, this is still our stuff. That was perfect.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, yeah.
And like I said, Studd was really great in this, really under the radar.
I thought, too, what added to it, this is one of the first matches on the show that I felt really watching the last like few MSGs leading up to this gave me a better appreciation. I remember watching this as a kid or whatever, and not really understanding where all these guys were at this point, like in their careers, you know, like a Tonga or a Hillbilly Jim. Like, having seen them all build up and get to this point added a lot to me. Even like our CD, like I never understood what he was when I first like would watch this as a kid, but you know, we've seen a lot of them where they've been working up to this point. And they got everyone in there. I mean, it was a cool spot for Bruno. Again, though, they didn't really seem to care about him there. They were all about just Fridge and Andre for the most part. He feels a little bit wasted. I'm surprised they didn't, you know, why not do him and Savage in New York?
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can still do the DQ, but at least you get some heat in a better match through Animal in the Battle Royal or whatever. I always had a memory of Siviafi being in this match. I guess he wasn't, huh? I must have just...
Nah.
I don't know. I'm glad he wasn't, but thinking back, I'd always thought he was. So anyway, any final thoughts on the Battle Royal? Okay.
It was just very well booked. Like I said, I think also the whole wrestling football separation, I think, was a big deal, and I think that works well, and
everything clicked. I thought Ernie Ladd was really good, and I thought even Kathy Lee added a lot to this match. I thought everything, the intros were good, and they really hit, you know, hit the jackpot on this one as far as how it could have went. I thought they hit every potential, they avoided every potential pothole on the way. All right, so we go back to New York. Vince and Susan are talking to Piper, who says he wanted to come for a picnic, he would have packed a lunch. Right when he was starting to fight, T backed off. He calls Fridge and T both cheaters and said he never got knocked out and doesn't have to retire, cut his hair, or dye himself black. We see highlights of the match as Piper yucks it up, saying he dropped T on his head, which doesn't do much damage. He basically says T got blown up and it was carried out of the ring crying. So everything we talked about. Back to Chicago, Gene chats with Jimbo Covert about his first wrestling experience. He said he was cheated. He came over to help Fridge, but he was blindsided by Frelick when he worked over Tonga. Sheik then comes in and said, tonight they prove that wrestlers are better than football players, and we watched some of the footage from the Battle Royal. And then it is time for our final match here in Chicago. But before that, Scott, do you think we may take a little breather, reset, and then we'll kind of hit the home stretch?
I believe we should do that, because now suddenly we're building this, what is this, Bears-Falcons feud? Is that right? What is that? What's happening now? Richard Dent's going to blindside Steve Barkowski in week two? I mean, that was pretty funny. Oh, that Bill Frelick. Damn those Falcons.
Cheating.
The Falcons were fucking terrible back then.
So right. It's not like they were rival for the Bears, like, you know, or whatever, whoever the fuck it was. But
yeah, I mean, if it was like, you know, somebody in the Vikings or something, that would have been one thing, or the Packers. But anyway, yeah, why don't we take a break? Before the Battle Royal, this show is the Drizzler. I mean, it really was. But the Battle Royal has picked it up, and I think more fun stuff is to come. John, any thoughts to this point?
No, things are picking up. And, yeah, just also out of that Battle Royal, they played that Fridge Stud thing to death. That was like one of the first WrestleMania moments, if you will, that they played, you know, on I think they got some, you know, a little stuff on the news and stuff. So they really got that moment perfect. And they got a lot of publicity from that moment. So.
All right.
Yeah. So there we go. So when we come back, we will finish up Chicago and then head over to the West Coast. But first, words, breaths, and breaths. Because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
Who the hell is CRZ?
It's me, Christopher Robin Zerman. This is the Place to Be Nation podcast.
All right, we are back here talking WrestleMania 2. Myself, Scott, Johnny D'Amato. Rough start to the show, everyone, but of course, we're hoping things settle back down. We have five matches to go, seven in the books. And, you know, we saw that big NFL versus WWE star battle royal, and there's one guy missing that I thought could have really added to the competition. And it's a guy that has miles and miles of heart. And that is Shane Falco, but he was not present, unfortunately. Maybe Gene Hackman wouldn't let him compete. But, of course, he was instead hitting the recording studio to record his number one hit this week, if the song we hear underneath us, and that's Rock Me Amadeus. Correct, Scott? Same Falco?
That is correct. Yes, it is. Yes, yes. Last time I checked, Keanu Reeves wasn't German.
Okay.
Was Falco German, D'Amato? He was,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Anyway, that is your number one song this week. As we talk about, this is a Monday, so the most recent Billboard Top 100 came out the previous Saturday, the 5th, and yes, finally reaching number one was Amadeus, Amadeus, boop, boop, Amadeus from Falco. At number two, R.O.C.K. in the USA by John Mellencamp. That's moving up the charts. Number three, moving up two spots, our man Prince and the Revolution with Kiss.
By the way, my comment last week went to dead silence, but I know John will appreciate my ROCK in the USA hot Australian from Hall Pass Girl, right? No?
Yep.
Still silent. Okay.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. I got to see that again. I think I saw it at your house on a visit once,
Fools.
Hall Pass.
Where's Andy Flanagan when I need him?
Number four, Secret Lovers, speaking of you and Andy, by Atlantic Star. At number five, Heart continues to move up the charts with These Dreams. Number six, In Excess with What You Need. I'm getting what you need, I'm getting what you need. Number seven, The Bangles, I think making their Vintage Vault Refresh debut with Manic Monday. Number eight, Let's Go All the Way by Sly Fox. Speaking of Andy Flanagan, I think that's his nickname. At number nine, little Robert Palmer, a little Addicted to Love. And at number 10, Elton John with the song named after the guy everyone thought was going to be in this main event, and that is Nikita. Oh. So
that was going to be Can You Feel the Love tonight.
Yeah, no, we're quite a ways away from that. So there's your top 100.
Top 10.
I mean, top
you
10.
Get top 100 out of the mind, I guess.
Yeah, we got top 100. Exactly, yes. We don't want to know what number. Number 97, I could look that up. No. Now we go from the music to the cinema, and actually, JR, very weird. No movies came out that Friday, April 4th. Kind of odd. So no need to look up and try and spell it or pronounce any foreign names. But looking ahead, JR, over the next couple of vaults, so when we get back to the house show circuit, we got some pretty legendary movies that come out in 1986. And I think we hit a couple of weekends. So we will pause for this weekend for this show. But we do get some big movies coming up in the future. The 1986, and it's pretty good that D'Amato's here, because the 1986 baseball season is in full swing. We're through spring training. Of course, the Kansas City Royals are your defending world champions, but a lot of teams looking ahead and, you know, staking their claim in 1986. Both New York teams are very, very good. We know that for a fact. But on this date, April 7th, neither the Mets nor the Yankees were playing that night. So I believe this was like opening day, probably. Only five games, nothing of note. Well, actually, yes, of note. Opening day at Dodger Stadium, the Dodgers beat the San Diego Padres 2-1. And the reason that's important is because somebody that wears Dodger blue will be talking about later on in the evening. So he obviously had a busy day on April 7th, managing his team during the day and doing some work at night, which I thought was pretty interesting. So there you go there. In the NBA, I think we're either close to the playoffs or towards the end of the season. I believe we're actually wrapping up the end of the season in the NBA, getting close to the playoffs. Five games. The Knicks, Johnny, actually won on this evening, 106-104. So our building, JR, our office was in use at Madison Square Garden, and the Knicks beat the Pacers 106-104. Gerald Wilkins led the scoring, Johnny, with 29 points.
This must be the Rick Pitino era, I believe.
86, yeah. And you know who led with 16 rebounds? Do you remember a guy on that 86 Knicks team?
Johnny Newman.
Ken Bannister.
The Animal, yeah. Kenny the Animal.
Ken the Animal Bannister led the 16 rebounds. The Knicks won the game. The high scorer of the day in the five games, Alex English, had 38 points. Denver beat Detroit.
Call that a Roger Morrissette.
Yes. 131-123, Denver with the win. Your division leaders as we wrap up the regular season. Celtics lead the East at 64-14. The Knicks, John, not that good. 23-57, last place. In the Central, the Bucks lead 55-24. Houston leads the Midwest at 50-29. And the Lakers lead the Pacific at 59-19. And finally, no games in the NHL. They're in the middle of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm not going to get into all the brackets right now, but no games on this day, JR. We'll talk more about the Stanley Cup playoffs when we get to our next week's house show. But the 1986 playoffs are in full swing, which, in my opinion, kind of asks another question. We'll talk more about this when we get to the house shows, because the Bruins and the Celtics obviously both were in the playoffs that year, because I feel like, and I wonder if this is a problem with house shows back then. Johnny, maybe we'll talk about this later on down the line. I don't know how far out the WWF booked house shows at some of these places, because the Boston Garden went like 3 months without a house show. And I wonder if it's because both the Bruins and the Celtics were in the playoffs, and, you know, April and May, they took up so many days because they were playing, you know, obviously they were playing, you know, opposite days. So, I always wondered about that, how far out they book, they book house shows to pay.
Yeah. I mean, they probably have flex dates. Like, they know that they may get bumped for stuff like that. So, I mean, it's probably pretty standard operating procedure at this point. You're running somewhere monthly. They know that there's a chance, you know, during these months it could get bumped around.
Yeah, I'm assuming so, because there is a pretty big gap at this stretch of 86 at the Boston Garden. But any event, that is it for our pop culture report for this evening. So why don't we get back to Chicago and our second title match of the evening, Jared.
And it's a big one. It is our tag team title rematch. These teams have battled here all through 1986, and the Dream Team keep escaping with their titles from the British Bulldogs, managed by Captain Lou. Of course, we saw the big six-man with Lou teaming with the Bulldogs and Johnny V with the Dream Team back at MSG a few weeks ago. And this thing's been escalating. The Bulldogs had that non-title win. The Dream Team escaped on TV. And as announced, we have two referees to keep order in this one. It's been a feud filled with wild madness. The Bulldogs laser-focused as they march out, accompanied by Albano and legendary Ozzy Osbourne, which I thought was a great pairing. Makes a lot of sense. Add some more star power. Arguably the best star power on the night. Gorilla reminds us that the Bulldogs have the non-title win. After a few minutes, things get sorted out. We open with the Hammer and Davey Boy. Davey throws Hammer down after a lockup, but Hammer comes back with some stiff strikes. They trade offense until Davey grabs the arm and goes to work. Hammer breaks free, but whiffs on a forearm smash, allowing Davey to tag out. Dynamo keeps pounding the arm and levels Hammer with a running shoulder block. Davey comes back in and tags Hammer, takes Hammer over with a nice vertical suplex for two. Hammer begs off and rolls outside to consult with Johnny V. Comes back in. He's able to back Davey to the corner and land some hard blows. Valentine tags in Beefcake, who works the arm. Davey breaks the armbar with a press slam and tags in Dynamite, who lays in the strikes. It picks up near falls. Davey tags right back in and keeps the pressure on Beefer, but they get too close to the corner. He tags in the Hammer, who levels Davey with a blow to the neck. Hammer starts laying in heavy shots and grabs a rear chin lock to grind Davey down. Davey escapes and tags in Dynamite, who goes to town on the Hammer. Gorilla and Gene are pretty much just ignoring Kathy at this point. She talks about her grandfather watching Gorgeous George. Davey picks up a near fall and tags in Dynamite for a double shoulder block and a near fall. Beefcake finally has enough and comes in and hammers Dynamite, but that short-lived as Kid gets a sunset flip for two. Hammer recovers and crushes Dynamite with a nasty front pile driver for a close near fall. Dynamite catches Hammer with a low blow, but Hammer recovers and heads up top. Dynamite catches him and slams him to the mat, leading to a brawl with everyone. Things reset, and Davey smacks Hammer and drops him with a big running power slam, but Beefcake makes the save. Davey gets a great vertical suplex for two, but Hammer reverses a whip and slings Davey shoulder first into the post. Beefcake comes in and works the shoulder, including a perfect hammerlock slam. Hammer comes in and drops Davey with a shoulder block and covers for two. Dynamite, but he picks him up at two. We should note Hammer had him beat. Dynamite scales the top rope, and Davey shoves Hammer into him when they collide heads hard, and Dynamite takes a sick bump off the top to the floor. Davey covers Hammer and gets the win with the massive pop. Albano and Ozzy Osbourne celebrate the titles as Kathy Lee and Gene and everyone else is partying in the ring, while poor Dynamite is just, like, out there on the floor dead. Davey, Hammer, and Beefcake are all recovering from all this violence that just went down, and these idiots are all celebrating. Davey finally goes against Dynamite from the floor, but he is seriously hurting. Gene chats with Albano about the win. Davey says they'll keep their promise of staying in the USA when they won the belts. Like most of the matches, I thought Hammer obviously was the star. He was in the ring for the majority. It's been interesting watching these Dream Team matches, how much they just kept Beefcake on the apron with Hammer just eating up like two-thirds of the match every time. The Bulldogs dominated a heavy portion of the bout as well. Great hard-hitting offense, a wonderful flow. The chemistry is tremendous. Ending was a bit anticlimactic because I think it was hard to see what happened and then it just ended. Like, I think the crowd didn't really catch that finish. It just happens fast. Hammer picks Davey up during the cover, helped keep the Dream Team strong as well. I was surprised we had no V interference. You know, we had all that build with the two referees and everything else. I cannot believe they didn't have Johnny V interfere and have Albano get the big pop by making the save, given how everything's built. The Bulldogs atop the mountain, ending what's been a really good Dream Team title reign. And a strong title match, best of the night. I went 3.5, John.
Yeah, I went 3.5, too. What stopped it from being 4 was the finish was a little wonky. I think they should have went with that the finish that they used in that non-title victory where Davey pressed Dynamite on top of Hammer. Here it was kind of, like you said, it came out of nowhere with the giant headbutt. And also, I think it was a little dumb that, you know, to have Hammer, like, pick him up like he was a jobber at 2. You know, to lift him up before the pin. But other than that, it was perfect. Like you said, Hammer dominated most of the time for the Dream Team. He was in there. Beefcake would be in there like a minute and then come right out. And Hammer took a beat. And he wasn't exactly a spring chicken at this time. He's getting thrown all over the place. But
my God, he's taking a shit kicking in this feud. Like, the whole feud. Just taking a beating. Yeah, it is interesting, the Beefcake thing. I mean, they really protected him during this whole run.
Yeah, and at the end, like Beefcake tries to make the save, and he makes like an exaggerated like trip on the ropes. Like I said, that was the only thing that kept it from being like a real 4-star classic. I didn't like the finish too much, but then at the end, I mean, JR, you're kind of vindicated because we already talked about the Animal, and here, fucking Albano, man, just him and I. Like I said, the Bulldogs are outside dead on the apron, and Albano's going, six-time champions! And then even Lou got on his case, said, hey, Captain Lou, you might want to check on your guys out there. and British Bulldogs forever! And the friggin' their blames are splattered all over the all over the floor.
Fucking Kathy Lee Crosby celebrating the title win while Dynamite's dead outside. I mean, I'll give Albano this in just saying, like, he was with them longer than I thought. Like, when I had watched this way back in the day, it seemed like he just glommed on out of nowhere. But watching the progression of him turning face and how long he's been with the Bulldogs, I feel like it's not as egregious as I thought, but it is ridiculous here where they're dead and all he gives a shit is patting his stats in the fucking ring. I mean that was ridiculous.
That's my favorite part. Gene goes, yeah, Captain Lou, you might want to give him a hand. It was just that's vintage.
Yeah, I pretty much thought that Albano was going to take the belt and leave. Like, hey, I have my own champions. Come on, Davey. And Davey's like, yeah, but I'm just cleaning up brain matter here. Ah, whatever. Forever. And Ozzy's probably snorting lines. And it was a disaster at the end. But I gave it 3.5 as well. This match is fantastic. And making a case, and I don't want to bleed one project to the next, but I'm going to go full bore on having Greg Valentine as one of the 100 greatest WWE guys of all
think
time.
So? Yeah. Not top 100. I mean, he's, to me, he's like top 15, maybe higher. I mean, he's awesome.
He's absolutely fucking outstanding. I mean, he sat there while Brutus didn't do a fucking thing during this entire title run. I mean, he didn't do anything. He sat there, did a couple of kicks, postured around the ring, and then tagged to Valentine, and then he either did all the work in terms of dictating, or he took, I mean, he took beatings. I mean, beatings in this feud. And we've watched how many, JR? Four, probably, I think.
I think three.
I've watched a couple. I mean, I've watched a lot. The in-between stuff, I've watched Six Mans and stuff. And Valentine is getting pummeled.
Yep.
Pummeled in all these matches. And fucking Beefcake does a couple of kicks and then goes back to the apron. I mean, it's night and day. Having said that, the Bulldogs are just top to bottom, maybe one of the first great tag teams of the Federation era. They top to bottom just have so much talent, and they're so, they work so well together because they have two different kinds of styles, and Dynamite's the high flyer and Davey Boy's the power guy. Although one week here, we had Dynamite almost won the Mr. Junior Universe, because that week he was almost bigger than Davey Boy. But they work so well together. I mean, they're the perfect combination of guys. The ending was pretty bad. I don't know what they were thinking.
Well, I don't think it's bad. I mean, it's nasty. It is nasty. It's almost like a waste, though, because the way they do it, you can't tell what happened. And it's like they don't even show it, really. So it's like they do these sick bumps where they collide heads clean, and then Dynamite flops to the floor at the top. I mean, just gross bumps, and you don't even know what happened. It just, yeah. So I won't say it's bad. It was just misdone. Like, it just wasn't done well.
Right.
No, it wasn't. And, I mean, we needed new tag team champions. It was time now. The Bulldogs were ready. And this is a big win for them. And best match of the night so far. I mean, we were getting precariously close to you know, 0 out of 10 for this show. But this, we're starting to finally pick up a little bit. And this match is fantastic. And 3.5 stars. And we have new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldogs. Quickly, Johnny, thoughts on the Dream Team's title reign? Thumbs up, thumbs down for you?
No, it's definitely a thumbs up. I mean, they acted heelish, and the way they got it from Wyndham and Rotundo, that was memorable when supposedly Johnny V with the lit cigar. And when time came, they put over the Bulldogs properly in this match, and you just see how Hammer. He's a definite. I mean, it shouldn't even be a discussion. It's just going to be a matter of how high he comes in the top 100.
It was time for the Dream Team. It was time. They've had a really good run. It's established Beefcake. It gave Valentine a nice bump after losing the IC title. It's got Johnny V some run. Do you guys agree, though? Are you surprised that we didn't get some manager shenanigans? I mean, that's been the whole feud, has been those guys getting involved, and Johnny V's constantly gotten involved. I was shocked that he didn't try to get in and Albano smack him for a big pop and then into the finish from there.
Yeah, and also they held him while Ozzy bites a bat and spits it in his face or something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
Or, you know, instead of throwing, you know, Fuji throwing salt, you know, Ozzy could have thrown some coke in their face or something. Yeah.
I think Ozzy was big star power for this one. Like, that was one of the biggest ones they had on this night, and it was the perfect fit.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. It was a great match and a great run for the Dream Team as great heel tag team champions, and a good run for the Bulldogs. I think we're gonna see some good stuff from them, because they've got some good heel teams coming up, and be a good year for the Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
And
British Bulldogs forever.
We're gonna stay in the USA. All right, so we head back to New York. Vince and Susan discuss what's still to come in LA, because that did wrap up the Chicago portion. And we here now head to the LA Sports Arena, where Jesse Ventura is in the lead chair alongside Lord Alfred Hayes and Elvira. They run down the remainder of the card, and then we head to the ring, where ring announcer Lee Marshall of Letters from Center Stage fame awaits. Let's do it now instead of the end. Why don't we do it? Because the commentators are here. What did you think of these pairings, and would you have shaken things up at all? To me, it was very surprising that they had Jesse Ventura pretty much do lead play-by-play,
right,
for the main event of WrestleMania, the big world title match, you know, in the final arena. Like, I know LA is a Jesse thing, you know, it makes sense, but I cannot believe that he, they had him and Al and Elvira here. Like, why not do Gorilla and Jesse here alone, and then just put Gene with Alfred or something. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. They can fake it well enough to get through Chicago, or just have Ernie Ladd do the show with Gene. Something like that. I was really surprised they had Jesse on his own with just Alfred here. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, but I was surprised that Jesse pulled it off. And I thought he was great at it. The women, they wanted to do the thing with the women, but it didn't do it for me. But I don't know how it came off for everybody else. But that was what they wanted. They wanted to have the women in each, the celebrity women.
Yeah, it's Jesse did a great job. I was just shocked that Moore heading in, that was their decision, that they had him call the world title match on his own like that. And he's pretty much on his own.
Yeah, it was a big risk, yeah. but he pulled it off surprisingly.
Yeah. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I would have just had – the only switch I would have done – obviously, we had to have – Vince needed to be in one place. I would have done – I still would have done Vince and Susan. I don't know what the fuck they're still sitting there for. And I would have just had Gene, Alfred, and right. – the only swap I would have done, Gene, Alfred, and
– Gorilla Jesse.
Gorilla – yeah, keep you forgetting Kathleen Crosby.
Well, whatever. Crosby, yeah, don't forget about the Gene. Women. Whatever. They're fine. They're where they are. They're not.
Yeah, the women are fine. Yeah. I would have just flip flopped Alfred and Gorilla. Well, Gorilla about, and Jesse would you have to do the main event.
Could you have flipped Jesse with Alfred? I mean, Jesse with Gorilla? Done Gene and Gorilla and Gorilla and God, now you're going to be fucked up. Gene and Jesse and Gorilla and Alfred in LA. Because Gorilla and Alfred have at least been doing the MSG stuff, and Gorilla can, you know, is their main guy pretty much. And then have Jesse work with Gene in Chicago. Like, that was a possibility as well.
That's a possibility.
And Jesse kind of adds credence to the
football
match.
I think Gorilla
match.
Needed to be in L.A. Yeah. I think Gorilla needed to be in L.A. He's the Hogan guy. I would have just done Gorilla and Jesse. Gorilla, Jesse, and Elvira, although I don't know. That would have worked out because Jesse would have – Gorilla gets in a groove, and I think we talk about this. You mentioned this, JR, with – the fact that Gorilla really doesn't engage Kathy Lee Crosby that much. He gets very focused, and he does that years later in another pay-per-view with another athlete, although for many different reasons. But it's evident that Gorilla gets focused on the match. He tries to stay focused. He has no time for any of this outside nonsense, guest celebrities and all this BS. So that's why I would have had no problem with Gorilla, Jesse, and Elvira, because Jesse could have engaged her, and Gorilla wouldn't even have had to bother talking to her. He would have just done the match, and you know, Jesse could have filled in the blanks. But anyway, that's my take. But I would have had no problem with your theory, JR, would have been fine as well. Gorilla and Alfred in LA would have been fine too. I think that would have worked out. But we have Jesse, and let's get to the opener.
Let's do it. In our opener, we have Ricky Steamboat taking on Hercules. Nice slot here for Hercules, opening up the final leg of the show against prime competition. Steamboat, now a veteran of the WWF with a great year under his belt. A good prove-it match for Herc as well. Herc attacks Steamboat off the bell, lays in some power offense, giving him no chance to catch his breath. Steamboat finally dodges a strike and catches fire, whipping Herc around with arm drags and then punishing the left arm. Steamboat alternates laying in strikes and working the arm, and the crowd is just loving it. The ref has bright red shoes on for some reason, I noticed. It is interesting hearing Al call the moves, and Jesse's doing color, so they're kind of alternating. Steamboat grinds the arm as Jesse and Elvira says he looks wimpy with a scarf tied around his leg. Herc is rattled as Steamer cracks him with a back elbow and follows with a suplex. Herc shoves Steamboat into the corner and almost takes his head off with a clothesline. Herc buries some knees to the head and then spikes Steamboat across the top rope with a hot shot. Steamboat tries to punch his way back in and slam Herc, but he gives out, and Herc falls on top for two. Herc clubs away and lays in some elbows, but stops to pose and only gets a two count. Al chastises him for the soft cover. Steamer chops his way back into it, but Hercules catches him with another hard clothesline for a pair of two counts. Herc press slams Steamboat and goes up top, but Steamboat gets the knees and drills him on his way down. Steamboat sprints up top and gets a high cross body for the win. That was a pretty fun sprint. I think it's the best Hercules match we've seen so far. He looked like a completely different guy out here than we've seen at MSG. Shows some nice power offense, never slowed down, and Steamboat selling is great as always. And that was a pretty fun way to open up in LA. I went 2 stars, Scott.
This was a great, not only for Steamboat, because he could wrestle a napkin, but Good spot for Herc. Good to showcase him. We've seen him on a few shows at the Garden against some lesser, much lesser talented competition. And this was good for him. I was happy for Herc that he got a good spot here. Losing to Ricky Steamboat's almost a badge of honor if you can at least keep up with him. You know what I mean? So I had no problems with this pairing, and good opener. Now that the brain trust is comfortable, they got to LA at a decent time. Now we can settle in, and it definitely feels like they've relaxed. Like the show feels more relaxed now that we're out of the first two cities and we can just focus on these next, four matches. And it feels that way. And, this match could have been shorter, and it wasn't, and that's fine. I thought it was great. I thought Hercules kept up as best he could. I thought Steamboat did a nice job kind of getting Hercules through it and telling a good story. So I was very pleased. I gave it 2 stars. Almost gave it 2.5, but Hercules didn't do that. Didn't go that far. He needed to give more to have it go higher than 2 stars. Most of that goes to Steamboat, but still a very good effort. Johnny?
Yeah, 2 across the board. Me too. And one of my favorite parts was kind of Jessica kind of switched up his usual heel persona, like he would never get on the heels, but here he gets on Hercules and he was like chiding him for posing instead of finishing off Steamboat. So Jesse was kind of more professional in this setting, which was good. But the only thing, him and Alfred, they needed to rein Elvira in a little. She was getting out of hand already. She was saying like stupid things like, "Oh, I'm used to vicious violence, but this is too much for me." And they're throwing in her little stuff that didn't add anything to the match. But otherwise, I'm with you guys. 2 stars.
Of course, as the story goes, Ricky Steamboat was originally scheduled to fight Bret Hart on this show, and it was switched. And Bret found out he was going to be in the Battle Royal instead, and they put Hercules here, and they ended up having Steamboat and Bret at a house show to make up for it. But that card could have looked a little bit different if they give Steamboat and Bret, what did this get, 8 minutes or so? 7:33. I mean, if him and Bret get 8 minutes, probably looking at a very different card here in L.A. But anyway, what could have been, could have been. All right, so we head back to the ring for our next match. As Adrian Adonis, my boy, who I cannot wait to rank very highly on the WWE Top 100. And yep. He is battling Uncle Elmer of the
A guy that you're going to rank even higher.
He's not even nominated yet. Will keeps pushing. He's trying to stump for people to get him in, but I stonewall him every time.
God, give it up.
Uncle fucking Elmer of the Hillbilly Contingency is here. Scott, I think I'll do this. Are we done with him? Because I know he's almost done, right? I'm not sure if he's...
No, you got SNME.
Oh, that's right. He's there.
Yeah, I think, we got one Saturday's main event coming up, and then he's pretty much gone.
The bucket of KOC.
Pig parts.
Bucket of KOC. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yes.
KFC, I mean.
Bucket of wings.
The big weigh-in. Yeah, the big weigh-in's coming. Yeah, you got one more.
Buried in the bucket. Huh? He kind of wish he was buried in the bucket.
Right.
It's so bad.
Random match here, as they've had a little interaction before. Fine to showcase Adonis, but again, another guy that deserves someone else to work with. Elmer and the Hillbillies have lost a lot of steam here in 86. Crowd is all over Adonis. Elmer is all alone since Hillbilly Jim was in the Battle Royal and Cousin Luke sucks and he's somewhere, God knows where. Elmer does the usual dumb jig as Adonis refuses to go near him. Yeah. Elmer also walks around doing the fairy hand signals as Adonis bails and embraces Jimmy Hart at ringside. Just awful, this fat, fucking worthless slob making fun of Adonis. Adonis has all sorts of makeup on, a bow on his head, and a moo-moo on for this show. First time we've seen the moo-moo, Scott. Elmer attacks Adrian as he gets in the ring and shoots him hard into the corner. Elmer punches Adonis so hard he falls on his fat ass and he gets back up and knocks Adonis to the floor. Adonis comes back, but Elmer punches him and he flies through the ropes into the post and back to the floor. Elmer yanks Adonis back in the ring and rips his moo-moo apart and then jumps back. Jump bumps him with his fat to knock Adonis back into the ropes where he gets tied up as usual. Elmer hammers him, but Adonis lands a shot to the gut and kicks away. Jesse reminds us how good Adonis is despite his new look. It's like they have to keep measuring that because they're afraid people are going to think he sucks because of what he looks like. Every match they say it. Elvira begs Adonis to put the dress back on. Elmer fights back up and knocks Adonis down but misses a leg drop. Adonis heads to the top and it's a big splash for the win. All Adonis here busting his ass and bumping around for Elmer, who did absolutely nothing besides fall when he tried to punch. Elmer's useless, adds no value. Adonis deserves so much better, bumping like a nut to make this slob look good. I'm just glad Adonis won and they didn't put Elmer over.
The finish was solid. I went half a star just for Adonis. He earned that half a star by killing himself out there for this worthless piece of shit. What did you think, D'Amato?
Yes, the same thing. A half for Adrian, where he just kind of like bumped himself over and tied himself up in the ropes. That was brilliant. And also for at the end when friggin' Elmer's on all fours and he puts the bow on his back, that was friggin' priceless.
Slob.
But otherwise, Elmer, I mean, he steals like Bundy's avalanche move and Hogan's leg drop. I mean, he can't even come up with his own move and the bear hug, which is used by hundreds of others. He couldn't even come up with an original finish. But this has to warm your heart that the Elmer train was finally derailed as he ate a pin. So you know his days are numbered.
I think it's quite sad that Uncle Elmer's best moment of work rate is when he did something to himself.
He knocked himself down.
So there's your moment of great work rate is when you do something to yourself.
Backwards on his ass.
Slob. Fucking slob.
Does this match seem somewhat familiar to you, JR? I think we just watched this match about 2 hours earlier in New York. Same circumstances.
Yeah, Elmer had like pretty much all the offense until the end, kind of like Jake gave Wells all the offense until the finish. Yeah.
And I was also thinking same as fucking Savage and Steel, that Savage had to sell the fucking talentless hack. Adonis is fucking awesome. And look, you mentioned the Moomoo, JR. Watching the in-between stuff, the Championship Wrestling's and the house shows, this is definitely the first time he's worn it. As far as I know,
yeah.
None of the tapings and
he saved his best for the biggest event.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, I watched a Maple Leaf Gardens house show and a Spectrum house show leading up to this, and he was in both, and he didn't have anything. As a matter of fact, he had still just plain black tights on. He didn't get into the colored tights until we get to this point as well. So he definitely kind of expanded the character on this show. But otherwise, he was doing his best. This fat fucking old slob tumbling around and falling down and doing the little dance. Oh, didn't you just want to knock him out? It's fucking bad hair and his beard and this is just so, everything about him was just aggravating. Thank God he didn't have Cousin Luke and those other fucking dopey assholes go to the ring with him. The worst thing we've seen.
They should have thrown this fuck in the battle royal and just had him go toe to toe with all the other fat guys that were in there and just given Adonis someone else. If you had a reshuffle,
he wouldn't be able to take a bump over the top rope though.
Whatever, they'll figure it out. They got our CD over. This is what I would have done. I would have put Elmer in the battle royal, him and Hillbilly. Put, as much as I hate to do this to Adonis, it's not helping him too much. Put Steel here because they at least were feuding at MSG and stuff, and like Steel can do the smoke and mirrors match better, and then you do Bruno Savage in Long Island.
I don't have a problem with the actual booking because after this they put Adrian over Strong with the flower shop, so for him to get a pin on a big guy, even though it's a slob like Elmer, but for him to get a pin is pretty impressive. So they at least put him over. I don't have a problem really with the booking.
Ugh, I just hate Elmer. I don't even want to be anywhere.
Sorry.
Not too much left. When he was doing the weak wrist, he literally
put a bow on Elmer's career.
When he was doing the weak wrist shit, like I was like, get out of here, you fucking pig! Yeah. Like just get out.
God.
You guys are queer. Look at me. Fucking asshole. All right,
one more.
All right,
so bad. Totally bad.
Lord Al talks to Hulk Hogan. Talks about Hulkamania lasting forever. Even if he only had one arm, he'd get in that cage and defend the title like a man. When he steps in the cage with the world watching, he'll feel sorry for Bundy. He's going to slap him around and climb out of the cage as the winner. And he warns Bobby Heenan to stay out of his business as well. All right, that leads us to our next big tag team match as the Funk Brothers, Scott. Yes, mm-hmm. That is Terry and his brother Dory, known by his nickname Hoss. Real-life mm-hmm. brothers, of course, sons of Dory Funk Sr. We've talked a lot about Terry. Dory is his first time we've seen him. Won the NWA World Heavyweight title in 1969 from Gene Kaniski. Held that for 4.5 years. And he would follow Terry here after Terry's singles run. And they are taking on the Junkyard Dog and Tito Santana. Of course, Funk and JYD have been feuding nonstop since the fall. Yep. Tito gets pulled into it here as well. Good idea, I thought, to bring Dory in. Keeps Terry in the top spot after he's finished with Hogan. Kind of gives him something to do. Terry shoves around the ring attendant as usual. A great face team continues JYD's never-ending issues with Funk and Jimmy Hart.
You know, Tito, you could argue maybe he would have been good with Savage, better than this. But, you know, him alongside JYD is in the semi-main, basically, in the last spot. JYD's basically main event level. I thought it's a big spot for Tito. Kind of a super babyface dream team in some ways. JYD, Jesse rips on JYD's chain as they clear the ring of the Funks. Terry chucked chairs into the ring. Haas and JYD open things up, and Terry somehow ends up instead, and they both JYD fights them both off, and Tito comes in as well. The Funks bail to regroup. We reset with Haas and JYD, but both tag right away, and now Tito and Terry feel each other out and lock up. Terry lays in some hard chops, but Tito avoids a charge and clotheslines Terry to the floor. Haas comes in, and Tito sends him scurrying with a pair of drop kicks. We reset again with JYD and Terry now, and JYD catches him with some hard punches and aggressively works him over. Haas saves Terry during a pin cover, but JYD just flings Terry hard to the floor again. Jesse questions the strategy as it gives Terry a chance to regroup every time. Terry slides in and tags in Haas, and JYD tags in Tito. Tito grabs a side headlock, but Haas catches him with a hard uppercut and then goes to work. But a moment later, Tito catches him with a flying forearm for two before Terry makes the save. The Funks bail again to regroup, but Tito pulls Haas back into the ring during a crisscross. Terry catches Tito in the back with a hard knee. That finally turns the tide. Haas pitches Tito outside where Hart lands a few kicks until JYD comes around to help him. Terry kicks Tito back to the floor as Elvira asks what Hart is doing when he gets involved. JYD chases Jimmy off again and shoves Tito back inside where Terry takes him over the suplex for two. Tito comes back with his own suplex. Terry gets a head of steam and him and Tito collide and collapse. Haas comes in, takes Tito over with a nice butterfly suplex for two, works him over with some uppercuts before tagging Terry in with a double clothesline. Terry gets a near fall but whiffs on an elbow. Terry cuts off Tito's comeback, but Tito is able to crawl around the mat and avoids Terry until tagging in the dog, who comes in and cleans house to a big pop. JYD levels Terry with a headbutt and backdrops him over the top in a wild spot. I thought that was one of the best spots of the night. JYD follows out and gets into a tussle with Haas and slams Terry on a table. Tito and Haas trade blows outside as Terry is hurting on the floor. Terry climbs back in as JYD pulls Jimmy Hart on the apron and slugs him to back down. Things break down as JYD gets a small package, but Haas breaks it up. Tito comes in and gets Haas in the figure four, but as the ref pushes Tito out, Jimmy pitches the megaphone to Terry, who bops the dog with it for the win. I thought this was a super fun hot tag match. All sorts of stooging and bumping and constant offense. Usual controlled chaos when the Funks are involved, and the crowd is really into Tito and JYD. It got hot late, too, with the brawling on the floor leading to the finish. And I thought the finish worked well. Funk gets one up on JYD with his usual chicanery, keeps Tito from taking the pin. Really good stuff, Scott. I went 3 stars on this. I love the hell out of this match.
I gave it 3 stars as well. Terry Funk, he's just an incredible showman. And one thing I got to give him credit for, and this match is a great example of it, is he took his brother, who, and I've watched a lot of his brother stuff in the 70s. He took his brother, who's really not the showman that Terry is, but he got him to kind of settle into this WWF style of things, and they worked really well together. So I applaud Terry for that, because he kind of got Haas to settle into this character-driven, charisma-driven federation and came off looking pretty good, I got to say. I love the Tito-JYD team. I really like that team. I like the way they look.
So you okay with Tito being in this slot? Because I knew you wanted him against Savage.
Yeah, if he wasn't going to be against Savage, this was fine. Because I like you made a great point about this is practically like a semi-main event, because we only got one match left after this. And he belongs here. He's earned the right if he's not going to be in a title match. Now, he didn't have to job. I was perplexed at the Funks winning, though. Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't get it.
I do have an idea.
Trying to make them contenders for the Bulldogs down the line.
I think that's my guess, is that they were going to line them up to feud with the Bulldogs, and they gave them the win here.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking too, which is a bummer, because
JYD's beaten him a few times, though. I mean, I think they cheat to win too. I mean, they've had a lot of faces over and stuff. So, I mean, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Tito didn't have to eat the pin, and JYD's pretty bulletproof at this point. So, I think the main thing for me is that Terry took his brother, who was a straight-up work-rate guy back in the day in Florida and
in the, you know, in the NWA territories, and made him kind of help adapt. And he kind of was like the sullen, silent, deadly partner of the Funk family, and he worked out well. So I'm giving Terry as much credit as I can, and unfortunately, I don't know if he's in our he's going to be in our top 100 project because I don't know if his swath of work is detailed enough.
He's in there,
but I will say that.
You mean you don't know if he? I mean, he's nominated. He's on the list.
I don't know if I put him on my list. Oh. Just based because I think his template is not wide enough compared to others. However, that's a different discussion. He was fantastic here, and he definitely got Haas to be out of his comfort zone into more of a character, charisma driven situation. And I think he succeeded at it. So 3 stars for me. Great match, Johnny.
Yeah, Scott, that's a great point. Like who would think that Haas would be able to fit in into the WWE, the way he, you know, an older, like bland kind of worker would, and he fit right in. Beautiful. And Terry just bumped like crazy in this match. He was a star of this match. And I go in 3 stars just like with you guys. But what got to me was at the end, Tito was kind of a shitty partner. like he came in and put a figure four on Haas and he wasn't the legal guy. And like the ref like took so much time getting Tito out of the ring that you know, he wasn't watching JYD's back and they were allowed
it's
to get
Latin,
the pin on him.
It's so. That Latin blood. It burns hot, as Gorilla always says.
Yeah, he was kind of selfish. He was kind of selfish to me that he wasn't looking out for his partner and he was just, you know, he just kept running in. So that's what kind of stuck out for me. It was unlike Tito because he's always like Mr. Perfect baby face. But
what did you think of the Funks winning, Johnny? Do you think they were setting them up for a tag?
No, it was definite because, but you know, Terry kind of skipped out. But after they were set up supposedly to go at it with the Bulldogs. Yeah, that's definitely it.
That would have been a fun feud. That would have been really good.
Yes,
I don't know. I don't know if they could have survived, man, because the Bulldogs would have thrown Terry all over the place, and that's probably why he bailed out.
That bump over the top is awesome. That was tremendous.
On
all
the
right.
table, yeah.
No, the one over the top rope.
He just throws him over
the top, backdrops him over the top.
Yep.
All right. Time for the main event here. The cage is getting assembled. We check out a highlight package to hype up the main, including footage of Hogan working out in his gym with Hillbilly Jim and his doctor. And Hogan's doctor says he warned Hulk not to sign for this match due to a risk of permanent disc injury. Hulk said he had to take the match despite the warning. Hulk does chin-ups with a 100-pound dumbbell hanging from his neck to prove his point and says he's been living in pain for 5.5 weeks, but right now he feels none of it. Jesse then talks to Bobby and Bundy. Heenan says he is the proudest man in the world tonight, and in just a bit, he'll be managing the new champion of the world. Jesse says he's worried about Bundy's beautiful face in the cage, and Bundy says it's a fact that every time he steps in the ring with Hogan, it's Hulk that ends up laid up in a hospital, not him. Hogan's going down. He's the next champion of the world and the most dominant force in wrestling. Heenan says Hogan will be broken in pieces, and it'll be Bundy mania from now on. And then we head to New York to catch up with Vince and Susan, who vamp and fill some time to talk about what is to come in this main event. We've talked about a lot of the build in our previous episodes. Saturday night's main event, of course, Hulk Hogan defending the title against Magnificent Morocco. While Hogan was attacking Bobby Heenan, Bundy came in and laid him out. Got updates from the hospital as Hogan is nursing the ribs. Well-built main event. The cage dip adds a lot to the intrigue. Bundy's been built well enough, but still lacks that extra flash or true legitimacy as a potential champ. Hogan's rib injury was shrewd, too, adds to the drama, and we get more celebs galore as Tommy Lasorda is brought out to be the guest ring announcer to a big pop here in L.A. Ricky Schroeder is announced as the special guest timekeeper, of course, actor on Silver Spoons, and he gets booed. No one likes Ricky. Actor Robert Conrad, who may be one of the most random fucking celebrities of all time to be at a Dirty Air show, comes out, and he's the special referee on the outside. Was he the time? Was he the announcer? No, Lasorda's name. He's a special ref, right? Enforcer ref or whatever.
Yes, Lasorda was the announcer.
All right, really good heat on Bundy and Heenan as they march to the ring focused. A huge pop for Hogan, as always. We're officially set to close out WrestleMania 2. Hulk's ribs are taped up, and Jesse said he expects a new champ tonight. We start with the two trading blows until Hogan takes control and unloads on Bundy before choking away with him at his own strap. Hogan runs Bundy to the cage and chops away before drilling him with a clothesline. Hogan keeps bringing the heat, but Bundy's able to land a few shots to the ribs to cut him off and take over control. Bundy keeps working the ribs and then slams Hulk hard to the mat. Bundy tries to leap through the door, but Hogan makes the save. Bundy goes back to the ribs and tears off the tape and chokes him with it and then ties Hogan's neck to the middle rope with the tape. Bundy tries to escape, but Hogan breaks free and stops him again. Hogan then slugs away and catches Bundy with a running back elbow and slings Bundy hard into the cage wall. Bundy's busted open as Hogan pulls him up and punches away at the cut and then rakes away at Bundy's back. Hogan slings Bundy into the cage again, and Alvaro wants the referee to stop it all. Hogan climbs up and chokes Bundy across the top rope with his foot and punches away at the cut. Hogan tries to slam Bundy, but his ribs give out and Bundy collapses on top. Bundy goes for the door, but Hogan fights through the rib pain and makes a save, choking Bundy with the tape. Bundy recovers and shoots Hogan into the corner and buries him with an avalanche, followed by a big splash. The crowd works to rally Hogan, and it works as he pops up and grabs Bundy's leg so he can't escape. Bundy clubs away as the virus says the blood is making her hungry. Bundy grabs another avalanche, but Hogan no-sells it and shoots Bundy hard into the corner, catches him a big power slam to a big pop. Hogan drops the leg and starts to climb, but Heenan ties him up, and Bundy makes a save. I thought that was a good falls finish there. Hogan kicks Bundy to the mat and escapes to the win for a big pop. Hogan then beats up Heenan after the match inside the cage, which the crowd loved. Very fun main event, kept tight. It didn't overstay its welcome. Bundy's offense was good. He hit all the avalanches and splashes. There was a good buzz in the crowd. Hogan is great as always, working hard and culminating in the power slam. Hogan fights through the injury, retains his title. Good main event, good match. It doesn't scream WrestleMania, but does anything really yet? We're not to that point. So, you know, it's fine for what this show is meant to be. And I went 3 stars on this, John.
Yes, I did too. The only thing, Bundy bled early and Hogan never bled. If they were allowed to juice, Hogan should have juiced him to create more sympathy and build up himself.
You think they
more
relied
on the dog?
You think they relied on the ribs more for that? Just figuring he had that already.
Yeah, and with the tape, sure, but still for optical purposes, I think Hogan should have juiced that. But also. On the grand scheme of things, there was no way that you thought that Bundy would have had a chance to win the belt,
right?
At that time, right? Did anybody think so? So the outcome was kind of obvious. But otherwise, like I said, the match, they don't waste any moves in the match, and they got to it quick, and Hogan no-sold the avalanche at the end, and showed that his, you know, Hulkamania rules as his ribs overpowered Bundy.
Bundy Mania is dead. John, we talked about
Elvira was starting to get annoying, though. Especially,
oh, yeah.
She was getting on Jesse's case saying, oh, what's the matter, Jesse? You're jealous you don't have a cartoon show? And then Jesse said, hey, you better shut up, otherwise I will take you out later. I won't keep you under this body, dick. You know.
John, we talked about this last week, but since you weren't here, do you want to weigh in quick? Is there anyone else you would have had over Bundy in this spot?
No, that's the only, even though I said there was no way that, you know, yeah, you thought that Bundy would have, but that angle was perfect, the way they set it up with this, you know, splashing onto the ribs. So I think they were good there, and Bundy was an opposing figure. I don't think Macho Man was ready yet, and plus at the time they wanted somebody with more of a, you know, a physical stature, somebody bigger. So I think it was good there, but for some reason there was just never any kind of, they didn't create the illusion of Bundy yet having a chance to actually win and get the belt. So there was something missing there, but I still would have stuck with Bundy. I think they did it right there.
Yeah, I know we always joke around about the whole Nikita Koloff thing, but I'm starting to think that was never, I don't think that was a non-starter. I know we don't give quarter stars, JR, but if I did, I would give this 3.25. Because I mean, it was really, really good. It's not as good as Bulldog's Dream Team, but I wanted to give it slightly more than 3 stars. But since we only go halves, so I'll give it 3. Bundy really worked hard to get to this point. And we can, and this is the best part about what we do, JR, because we've been able to document the gaps in this path that maybe we hadn't remembered or hadn't seen. Bundy really earned this spot. And he went in like gangbusters. I don't know if he was going to win or not, but he was going to make you think it, though. And I think this was a fun coming out party for Hogan on a national stage, because WrestleMania 1 was, you know, kind of a dog and pony show. He had to protect T and then, you know, Piper and all the other, you know, Muhammad Ali and all that. But on this stage, this was a big moment for Hogan to really show everybody that I am the top dog in this business and I am the number one guy in this promotion. And I can carry a match when I need to. And he did here. Sold the ribs, you know, busted open and busted Bundy open. I agree with you, Johnny. I think maybe Hogan could have gotten bloody too, but a lot of times they don't totally think that way. But I just think the storytelling was great. And if I could give it an extra quarter star, I would. This show ends on a high note. I never liked that cage. I wish they'd stay with the nice mesh cage, but obviously they were looking more for optics and trying to make sure the camera had holes that they could shoot through. But it was a great match, and I think it's a much better match than people remember, because I think people want to just dump on every match on this show because they, you know, the show is not great.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it might just have to do with the look of it. Like, even as a kid, when I'd rent this tape, it's a Hogan versus Bundy. Like, it didn't feel like a big main event match or a big challenge. I mean, I, of course, was born into the era where WrestleMania was a big deal. So, like, even looking at this main event never felt like a huge thing. Like, Bundy just... And we've seen it. I mean, it was just weird timing for him because he comes in before one, and they had so much downtime to fill with him that we've seen him go through so much stuff. Whereas if he had just come in like, November and murdered Hogan, maybe he's a little bit more believable. But we've kind of seen enough of him now. Like, we talked about this last show, but we've seen enough of him now where it's kind of like, all right, you know, we kind of get it, Bundy. Like, you probably, you know, just a match to fill. But I don't think there's anything else. I mean, even if Savage, which is the other rumor that it was meant to be him, I mean, I don't, you know, we've seen him get beat in MSG now too or whatever, but you probably get a better match, maybe a more memorable match if you do Hogan Savage in the cage. But then does it kill Savage for future stuff? You know, like, that's a consideration too. I don't know if they were thinking that at the time, but if you have that in such a marquee match instead of kind of those hidden MSG shows, is that something, does that kill Savage's value going forward in any way? As we see it, I mean, pretty much eradicates Bundy. So
plus the visual spectacle of Hogan slamming Bundy.
Right.
I think they wanted that moment.
That too. No, he's a perfect heel, this defeat to Hogan, and they did their best to make it as believable as it could be. All right, so we had a question from a listener. Jeffrey Thomas asked us, basically, you know, if you take the second half of the show, which I'll say starts probably at the Battle Royal, is this a top 10 Mania card? Like, from the Battle Royal to the end. I'll say that it's really good. I don't know if it's top 10 per se. I mean, I guess you get, what, 2 3-star matches, a 3.5, and a 2. I mean, yeah, it gets... I mean, outside of Elmer Adonis, it's probably in the running. It'd be really tight because the first half is just abysmal. So, I mean, if you shorten the show, and I guess we can combine this with the second question. So there's Jeffrey's question. What I would say you'd do is shorten the show considerably, do 2 venues, do East Coast, West Coast, get rid of Chicago, and then just do – or keep Chicago and L.A., get rid of New York, whatever you want to do. And I would do – I'd keep all the L.A. matches, keep the Battle Royal – keep Piper T, and then add in a really good IC title match, whether it's Savage, Bruno, Savage, or Orndorff, something like that. And then I think you have what could have been a much tighter card with more time given, less jumping around, less nonsense. Just do the 2 arenas, eliminate Kirchner, eliminate the women, eliminate Wills, you know, eliminate the opener, and just keep a much tighter show. I think you're in a lot better shape. What do you think, John, of those 2 points?
I don't think a top 10. But it definitely comes across better than what most people consider WrestleMania 2 like one of the worst ones of all time. I think it removes out of bottom 10, but maybe not the top 10, but definitely the second half, and especially the timing of the matches. Like, there were no wasted moves. There was no waste of time. You know, the matches were perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, perfect, like 8 to 10 minutes. And they were perfect as far as that is concerned, as far as the timing, which made it feel like it moves like so smoothly, and that added to it. But I wouldn't say top 10.
What do you think, Scott?
No, it's not top 10. It's not top 10, but it definitely saves us from being a bottom 5. And What's sad is a lot of people may still rank this WrestleMania as a bottom five. Because
I don't
the
think
first
that's
half
sad.
Is
I mean, it's possible.
It's so epically.
It's true.
I know, but I mean, the first half is just so epically bad.
Yeah.
Does this back end bail it out enough? My answer is probably not.
Well,
but,
I mean, if you look at it like an MSG show, like, I mean, Kelly always says, if you get a few good things, you're kind of happy. So, I mean, if you look at it through that lens.
Yeah.
But if you're comparing to other manias in the lists and everything else we do, no, of course it's not going to hold up. But for the time.
When 7 out of the 12 matches are one star or less. So
right.
It can't be up there. It can't be nowhere near the top 10 with that kind of ratio.
No, but for the time frame,
and it
works.
There's no 5-star match right. to pull it up there. So.
Yeah. For the time frame, it's like a really good house. It would probably have been a strong house show if you had this card because
right.
of the quality of matches you get at the back end, and that's what we look for. But when you compare it to other manias, it's not going to stand out.
No, not at all. Not at all. But the back end is pretty good as a standalone, but unfortunately we can't think that way, and the first 7 matches are just utterly dreadful. They really are. Which means we're going to have some very interesting awards to get us through this, to finish this stuff up.
All right. So here we go then. Match of the night. I would assume we're all in alignment based on our star ratings, and that is the Bulldogs versus the Dream Team.
Yep.
Yep, right. Absolutely. But Hogan Bundy deserves a lot of love.
Yeah, of course. The Cousin Jr., which is the worst match of the card, I went with Velvet versus Moolah, John.
Yes, me too.
All right, Scott.
I have 3 duds, so... It doesn't matter either way. To make it easy, I'll agree with you. I'll put Velvet and Moolah as well. But that Steel Savage match is just – I hate giving Savage a dud. So I'm not going to punish him because his opponent's a piece of shit.
At least
so
that accomplished something, though. Moolah Velvet was a waste of fucking time.
It was – no, definitely, yeah. definitely. I don't ever want to put – I will never put – no matter how bad his opponent is, I will never put a Savage match as worst match of anything. So I'm not gonna punish him because his opponent was garbage. I will agree with you guys on Velvet and Moolah.
A big dud. That's the sound Velvet's tits made when they exploded against the mat.
And we did give Savage Steel the worst match of the night, by the way, back in the January 86 Scott, so you do have precedent. MVP of the night, I went with Hulk Hogan. I thought he was arguably the best. He was the biggest star. He worked his ass off. He carried that match, I thought. I mean, Bundy did his part as well, but Hogan's star power and selling were tremendous. To me, he was the best of the night, Scott.
You know, I think I'm going to change that January 4th, 86. I don't like that pick. The MVP of the show, I give it to the Bulldogs. Okay. They were sparkling, and they showed up when they needed to, and, they were outstanding. And you know, Davey Dynamite sacrificed his fucking life, to make sure they won the belts. So I give it to the Bulldogs.
Along those lines, Scott, I gave it to the Hammer because he took an ass kicker from the Bulldogs, and I think he was he made that match, and I'm going with the Hammer.
I mean, I felt that way a lot with Hammer in a lot of these matches. That he stood out a ton on all these shows. We started back at the Saturday Night's Main Event in March with the Bulldogs match, where he just, you know, to me, he was the most glaringly great guy, just taking that shit kicking. But I don't know, for some reason, Hogan always pops out to me in these. When talking MVPs. All right, so next up is our Gator Wolf Award, which is the worst worker. I guess you can all probably gather what I'm going with, and that is, of course, that fat fuck Uncle Elmer. Anyone disagree? Normally I'd go Arcidi, but he didn't really get much ring time here tonight. So
Elmer reached a new low when he fell on his ass from his own punch. That was a new low.
I will give it to Uncle Elmer, but I will definitely give honorable mention to fucking George Steele. They both are just wasted, fat, talentless pieces of shit.
But again, at least Steele has the little psychology. He's kind of getting the story across. Elmer, I mean, he can't even walk. You know what I mean? Like, he's just so fucking worthless. Like, he gets nothing across other than bigotry and uselessness. So, fuck him. All right. The best moment of the night, I went with Andre winning the Battle Royal. I thought it was a cool capper. He's a king of the Battle Royal. The way he threw the hearts out was neat. He survives all the NFL guys. I really like that moment. To me, it's an all-time classic Mania moment. John?
I got to go with Hogan no-selling the Avalanche and followed by the Slam Bundy.
All right, and Scott?
Best moment of the night. it's hard to kind of sift one out. I'm going to go with the end of the Funk's JYD Tito tag. I kind of dug the perfect. It was perfect execution by Hart, by Jimmy Hart and Terry and Haas, to have Tito distracted. You know, Terry catches the megaphone perfectly, cracks JYD perfectly, crawls over. I'm going to go for the end of that tag. I thought it was one of the best moments of the night, best executed, best choreographed to get to that finish. So I'm going to go with that.
Right. I was worried. I thought you were going to go when Adrian put the bow on Elma's back.
Hell of a finish.
That's JR's moment right there.
All right. Junior Mr. Universe Award for the most juiced up guy in the show. I thought the British Bulldogs stood out here. Although you got Arcidi too. God, they were all fucking huge.
And Tony Atlas.
And Atlas. Ugh, all the champions in one spot. I thought the Bulldogs got the most screen time. They looked the most juiced. I mean, it's hard to not give it to Arcidi, but I thought the Bulldogs were just really fucking ripped here. What'd you think, Scott?
I'm giving it to Uncle Elmer because he ate Mr. Junior's juice.
He ate the most juice.
Yeah, I'll give it to the Bulldogs, but again, it's hard. Anytime you see Ted Arcidi, it's hard not to give it to him, but you're right. He was only on, technically, you only paid attention to him for about a minute. So, but I mean, we had everybody. We had all the heavyweights. Orndorff, fucking. The only one we didn't have was Rick McGraw. He was the only guy, rest his soul. He was the only one that wasn't at this show. That's a past winner. But I'll go with the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I concur. Davey Boy was getting out of hand here. Mm.
All right, and that brings us to our grade out of 10. So WrestleMania 1, Scott, you went 10, and I went with an 8, which seems quite almost inflated as Ted Arcidi, looking back. I will go... I mean, there's some good stuff here. It's not the dog. It's always, you know, people like me have always said it is. I'll say that. That said, I don't think it's good per se. I think it's good in the sense of the stuff we've been watching. In some ways, though, it also doesn't feel like, you know, we talked about this at the Wrestling Classic. A lot of it feels disconnected from the stuff we've been watching. Outside of Hogan, Bundy, the tag titles, and Savage Steel, and I guess Piper, a lot of it just seems kind of randomized and like, I don't know. It just seems disjointed. If you're like watching these in order, it doesn't feel like it's part of the canon in order, some of it. But again, that's probably presentation stuff. So I think it's middle of the road, but slightly down because it's meant to be the biggest show of the year and there's still so much sludge. Props to them for trying the three arena thing and trying to put the celebrity feel, but that falls short too. Just all these celebrities are Hollywood Squares levels, pretty much. So I went 4.5 out of 10. I mean, I think it's higher than I would have expected in the past, but it's, you know, I can't really go higher than that. I mean, I know I've had MSG house shows higher than that, but expectations are different for those. Scott.
Yeah, when you watch this show, you do realize you're pretty much grading down the middle. And then decide, like, you pretty much go in every show saying every show could be a 5, and then you decide whether it's going to slip down or slip up depending on how the show progresses. Unfortunately, the show kind of starts at 5. By the time you get to the tag title match, it's like 1.5, and then the rest of the show kind of brings it back. But I agree with you. I can't even keep it at 50-50. I will go slightly higher than you because I thought the LA portion was really, really good. But then again, I did do 3 duds. I'm gonna keep it at 4 with you. I went four and a half.
Okay.
See, I'm gonna go to 4. I wanted to go to 4.5, but the first, I mean, 3 duds, and they're just bad duds. They're bad, unwatchably bad compared to the LA part of the show. The only thing in LA that screwed the pooch was Uncle Elmer, and that was entertaining just to see him fall on his fat ass so he can't even throw a punch. That was at least entertaining to just laugh at that he's such a fucking clown. But the first 7 matches are just unwatchable dreck. If I don't watch WrestleMania 2 again for John Pro doesn't want to watch it again for at least 20 years. It's just bad. It's not good, and it didn't. That beginning just couldn't bail out. That ending couldn't bail out the beginning. So I was going to give it a 4.5, but I can't. I'm going to give it a 4. John?
Yeah, I'm going to go 4.5. It's got to be a little bit below average because, like we said, 7 out of the 12 matches is that's a bad ratio. For 7 out of 12 duds. But But the good stuff was real good, and the timing of the matches they got, you know, after they got the rush jobs over with, the timing of some of those LA matches were perfect. So there's still some hidden gems that were forgotten about here, but yeah, you can't go too high. I got to go 4.5.
All right, there you have it. That will be the end of WrestleMania 2. John, hope you had a good time. It was fun to have you here, breaking down the show. And
thank you. Thank you. It was awesome.
Hopefully, I want to watch it.
Yeah,
again.
let's put a bow on that.
Yeah,
good with just WrestleMania like 2. All right, so we'll be back next week, Scott. We're going to be looking at the 422-86 MSG House Show. Our buddy Kelly Nelson will be back with us. Going to be Tuesday night next week. We got some conflicts on Monday, so look for us on Tuesday. Also, we got some other news I guess we should talk about, and that is the, I don't want to say demise, but hiatus, maybe permanent hiatus of Clotheslines and Headlines. This personal life in the way with me and Steve, and you know, we're working the other co-hosts, rotating in kind of hard. And on your end, bringing some stability to Main Event was part of the goal in this decision as well. So beginning this week, we'll launch the all-new version of Main Event, and that'll feature you and Nate Milton, who, of course, was on Clotheslines and Headlines with me and Steve. And you and Nate will be co-hosts on Main Event and kind of will be keeping the Clotheslines and Headlines format. So you'll talk other stuff beyond WWE. You'll bring in some guests and rotating hosts, and looking to basically combine the shows under the Main Event name is the goal there. So that'll be the debuting this week on the Pro PlayStation Wrestling feed on iTunes and PlayStation.com. Anything you want to mention really quickly about that?
I'm looking forward to this next chapter in the history of PlayStation Nation's Main Event. Words cannot describe how pumped I am to have the Godfather with me. And yeah, it's going to be outstanding. And we got a good show for you this week. We definitely are going to have a guest on to preview Sunday's Extreme Rules, a pay-per-view from Baltimore. You know, we'll talk. There's probably some other stuff going on. We'll definitely talk probably some TNA, a little Ring of Honor, etc. So we're kind of getting ourselves kind of settled in here. So it'll be a fun show this week. Looking forward to it. And again, looking forward to seeing the Godfather back here. So definitely looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun show this week.
For sure. So Clotheslines and Headlines is great. I had a blast doing that show. This is getting tougher to keep up. And that wasn't fair. I mean, Steve and I are both struggling to keep up with the current stuff. So it wasn't fair to us to go on that show and not be as in tune as we needed to be. Fair to the listeners or the guests. So it may be back someday, and maybe we'll be guests on Main Event. But the spirit of the show will live on with Main Event. And we wanted to make sure we kept Nate in the house as well. So, all right, let's wrap up. Again, we'll be back next Tuesday here. Be sure to check out everything on PlayStation.com, including the Greatest WWE Wrestler Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project that's ongoing, like we talked about earlier. Check out our iTunes feeds, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and Pro Wrestling Only. Twitter, place number 2B Nation, Facebook.com/PlaceToBNation as well. Shop with us, PlaceToBNation.com/Amazon. So, for Johnny D, for Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you in a week. This is it.
Peace. I'm not afraid to